Welcome to this spooky, completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, October 27th, 2020, alongside, in pain, Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm painfully obnoxious, Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about lots of good stuff. Should Nintendo abandon the Switch?
Yes, absolutely.
PS2 20th anniversary, Quibi might be shutting down. We will be shutting down.
It is more shutting down.
And a Q&A. First, we got wares. We got stuff to give the trick-or-treaters. We got enamel pins. We got RBI baseball stickers at ultimatenintendo.com. If you want to throw 6.5-pound NES and SNES guidebooks into their little plastic bags that'll rip apart, you can do that as well. You can go to ultimatenintendo.com and get those as well. You can also leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/thecupodcast. Next week, we will be going through some more. We can't this week because we don't need Ian laughing too much because Ian's in a lot of pain. Ian, how was your weekend?
We can start with the not so fantastic dentist appointment yesterday. I had 2 teeth extracted and 2 bone grafts done.
Bone grafts? Like that's like your jawline they had to like do something with?
So they basically, they not to, you know, get super gross, but they pack the sockets with bone afterwards. That basically, so if you get a tooth extracted, your body will absorb whatever bone is left in there, and it just goes away. Your body's like, I don't need this anymore. So if you want to get implants done, which I will probably have done at some point, although they're expensive, so it won't be for a few years, you need to have a bone graft done. Otherwise, there's nothing to
nail it down to.
Yeah, nothing to affix the implant to. It's weird, too. They draw your blood first, and they spin it in a centrifuge, and they take the separated like platelet stuff off, and it's gross. I saw them do it. It's like a fucking globby globule. And then they press it down and extract all the moisture from it. And they use that platelet-rich fibrin, they call it, as like a membrane over the top of the bone graft because it helps accelerate the growth of the bone.
Wow, they've come a long way with tooth technology like this probably the past 10 years or so.
They sure as fuck have. I've got platelet membranes. I've got Teflon in here right now.
Teflon?
There's a Teflon membrane over the top of it.
I didn't know that when they took shit out of my mouth. It was just like, all right, here you go. Here's an aspirin. Get the hell out.
Yeah. So that was fun. Other than that, though, Vani and I have been catching up on Adventure Time. We were really into Adventure Time when it first came out, and we stopped, I think, just after the 5th season. And, I don't know, just flipping through stuff to watch, we decided to start, you know, to pick it back up. The show ended, I think, sometime last year. And I don't know why I stopped. That show is, I mean, it was everywhere for a while, and it was kind of annoying hearing people constantly quote it and stuff like that. But it's a good show. It's creative, and they really kind of let the team do whatever the hell they wanted with it later. So it's been a lot of fun catching up on that. But yeah, that's pretty much been my weekend. I ate half a pint of ice cream for dinner last night.
What flavor?
It's a new one that Ben and Jerry's is doing called Peanut Butter World.
Oh!
It's milk chocolate ice cream with a peanut butter swirl. They've got a new type of swirl at Ben and Jerry's that they've put in some of them, a chocolate cookie swirl. And you know those double chocolate cookies? Like, they basically, so basically,
like a chocolate cookie with a chocolate, like,
chips. Yeah, there's no chocolate chips in there, but it's like the chocolate cookie base, but it's like crushed down and turned into something that they can swirl into the ice cream. So it tastes like there's a bunch of like underbaked chocolate cookies in there. It's fucking fantastic.
That's Vermont, right?
Huh?
That's Vermont.
Vermont. Ben and Jerry's is Vermont.
Isn't Vermont like one of the only states where like everyone gets health care? Like, basically.
I have no idea.
So you can put out your deadly awesomely good ice cream to the rest of the world, Vermont, because you're taken care of there with your socialized Vermont medicine, whatever the hell they have up there. I think it's a little bit different whatever they have up there, because there's like no one in Vermont. There's like 12 people, and half of them are like, you know, living in the backwoods.
They handily tell you what a full pint of ice cream's calories is on there, and it's 1,340 calories for a full pint.
Holy fuck.
Yeah. Luckily, I didn't eat anything yesterday besides that and a yogurt, so I'm okay.
Woo! They need a protein-based ice cream. I'm sure they exist in order to, you know, go after the fitness folks.
They do. I haven't had them yet, but there is a company called Halo Top.
Halo Top. You're up on the ice cream news.
That does a keto ice cream. And it's still not, like, good for you, but the... It is what you're thinking. There are more protein based ice creams.
Yeah, they probably use like coconut milk, things like that, a little bit. They have a creamery peanut butter cup light ice cream. 330 calories.
I had a non dairy ice cream the other day that was
they're not bad.
That was cashew based. It was really, really good.
Okay, I'm looking into this. Obviously, these are more expensive. It's $4 to get a pint. There's only 330 calories the whole container. Yeah. So that's a quarter of what you just ate, basically.
<Yeah. laughs> Well, and honestly, what a lot of this stuff does is I'm glad I'm finally seeing companies that instead of putting fake sugar into something, are simply using less sugar, because I find most things to be overly sweet anyway. The company Chobani, it's a yogurt company.
Oh, yeah.
I
used to eat that.
My favorite Greek yogurt in the world is Chobani has a line of half sugar yogurts.
Uh-huh.
So they're like 11 grams of carb per serving, like only 100, I think, in 10 calories per cup.
That's what this has, 110.
And yeah, it's super tasty, and there's no fake sugar or anything in there. All they did was half the amount of sugar, and it still tastes sweet. Like, the amount of sugar they put into some of this shit, it's just insane.
It looks like this Halo Top, they just use skim milk, so that's why it's less. It's not cream. So it's like, if you can get around that, I can't drink whole milk anymore anyway. I can't even drink 2%.
I can't drink whole, but I can't do skim either.
I can only do skim. That's what I'm saying. I can't. There's too much sugar in
whole milk.
Why
even bother drinking milk at that point?
Well, that's why I gave up milk. I haven't drank, like, I used to have like a glass of milk a day, or like obviously with cereal, and I always railed at how awful eating cereal is for you with milk in the morning. But I stopped. I stopped years ago. I stopped about a year after I moved in here.
I fucking love milk.
No, I like it too, but it's like, you might as well just inject sugar into your arm. You might as well. That's basically what you're doing at that point. There's a reason why, you know, most humans on the earth can't drink milk when they're adults. We don't need it. The Europeans are the exception. We're like the exceptions.
I'm one of the lucky few that can. Milk does not bother me.
Most of the world is lactose intolerant when they get to be older. They don't drink milk regularly. So that's interesting. What did I do? I watched the Borat subsequent movie film. It was surprisingly good. The first movie I enjoyed, but that's like 2006. That was more like, or 2007. Wow, before I moved out here, more like kind of more shock humor, just for the sake of shock humor. Yeah, poke fun on how, you know, Americans had issues, and you know, some were bigots and things. Famously, there was like they hung out with the frat boys like in the RV. That was a big thing. They tried to sue them. They said, "Oh, you ruined our lives by showing us drinking and saying how, you know," basically being themselves and just having a good old time.
I didn't see the first one or the second one, so I'm not sure what that is.
But. Obviously, things have changed the past 13 years, not just in terms of what's acceptable to put on film, but in terms of how, I guess, more open we are about how awful things are with social media. It's easier to see that in 24-hour news cycle. A lot's changed the past 13, 14 years. But there was a nice message to this film, better message, because it involves Borat's daughter who comes along with him, so there's a nice message there about how he learns to love his daughter.
I heard she's the star of the show.
I don't know where. Supposedly she just auditioned. This is like the first thing.
She answered an open casting.
No, she was outstanding. Like she looks like she'd been doing improv forever. Obviously, they probably have like a loose script before you go into these situations, and they might even redo some lines if the people are in on it. You can't tell who's in on it or not, because how do most people not know about Borat at this point? Even if you're older, you must have heard about it. It was pretty much the biggest thing that summer when that came out back in, was that 2007 or so? So anyway, but it was interesting. And it showed the ugly underbelly of our society and what's been going on. And that's, you know, that's what it leaned on more. So it was definitely an appropriate film for this year. And I watched that, and then I watched The Boys Season 2 on Amazon Prime, which is also Borb. Amazon Prime's killing it. And The Boys Season 2 was fun. It's a, The Boys is like the goriest thing you've ever seen. It's gorier than a horror movie. How much gore. It's basically like the closest thing you'll ever get to like a modernized Watchmen. I know they did the Watchmen series, but I mean, like, this really takes that the message to a cartoonish level in how they show about, you know, the superheroes, if they existed, what they might really be like, and they're all psychologically damaged, and they abuse their powers, and all the collateral damage, and the corporations taking it over. And Watchmen touches on that stuff to agree, but this obviously takes it to like the next, like, over the top level with that. So I'm interested in seeing season three of The Boys whenever they make it. Hey, I'm waiting for Jack Ryan season three. They must have delayed that because of COVID. I need my Amazon Prime stuff, damn it. Need my Jack Ryan series. Very, very good interpretation of that. So Cyberpunk, Ian, it's been delayed. Breaking news. Oh, no, my soundboard's not on here. So Cyberpunk, God, I got to get grab it.
God, it's like fucking Christmas.
No! Update. So this was a tweet that just came out this morning, right before we recorded. The new release date is moving back from mid-November to December 10th. So the delay applies to all platforms. So originally this was coming out, Ian, you said, in April.
So originally it was supposed to be, I believe it was supposed to be April of this year. Then they pushed it to September, then to November, and now pushing it to December.
So the announcement said, in part, most likely there are many emotions and questions in your heads. So first and foremost, please accept our humble apologies. The team cited the complexity of creating and testing what amounts to 9 different versions of the game ahead of its launch. 9? I guess with all the different system iterations, Xbox One, One S, and all that stuff. But, no Switch version, of course. The console would explode in your hands. The game will be compatible with current generation consoles, as well as the next generation PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. Is also coming to Google Stadia's cloud gaming platform. All right, so obviously people are annoyed by this because some people are saying, hey, I took off time from work in order to play this. That's a whole other conversation I don't want to get into. But yeah, people are disappointed by this. This is like supposed to be like the big game of the year that people are waiting on. And yeah, it's frustrating. I'll ask this. How could you not foresee these delays that keep creeping up? I just don't understand how you project manage at this company. Well, I don't understand how like you let it get to this point where it's like, all right, it's going to come out in like less than a few weeks. Now we need to delay it again. Like, you didn't see this a month ago? Like, I don't understand it. I don't know. I like project management. I'm really good at it. Get it. And I don't understand how you don't see this stuff coming a mile away. Maybe they're not fit project managers, I guess, because otherwise you wouldn't have all these delays.
No, obviously they're not. I think part of it was, they wanted, so when they delayed it to November and they were talking about crunch, they were trying to push that there's only going to be 6 days of crunch. And then they announced that it went gold. And I think,
I saw that picture of them holding it.
I think a lot of people are upset because they announced that it went gold. And that's supposed to mean that the game is
printable for shipment.
But what gold means now compared to what gold meant back in the day is different.
Be right back.
God damn it, he's getting the soundboard. This is probably like update stuff, like day one update stuff. There's always a day one patch. Nothing is ever truly gold, I don't think, when the company says it at this point. So, you know, just because they said they went gold does not mean that they're done with the work. This game is going to be something, I think, that they're going to be working on for quite some time if it's, you know, the size and scale that they say
did
it
you-
is.
Did you say there was an update?
I did say there was an update, Pat.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. Everyone probably understands that when you go gold, that just means, hey, we're at the process where we can print this thing, mass produce, and put it at storage.
My question is, like, how bad is the gold build that you have to, after it goes gold, come out and say that we're delaying it another 21 days? Like,
my question is, how stupid are you from a PR standpoint after you've already delayed this thing twice already, one, two, or three times, what have you, that you need to put out a picture of your team holding it, so because that communicates to people that don't know any better, oh, it's done. They don't know any better, sure. Most of the audience. Why even do that? Like, you're just asking for this.
Yeah.
So, I'm not even saying this could be the best game ever, but the PR has been absolutely horrendous for something like this. Abysmal.
It hasn't helped my interest in the game at all. I was mildly... I mean, from the first trailer, I looked at it and I said, this is not my interpretation of Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk is a license. It's, you know, I'm sure most people know this, but the game is based on the pen and paper rules that are actually called Cyberpunk. But there are lots of interpretations of Cyberpunk as an aesthetic, and this to me looks like some sort of lazy nostalgia grab 80s sort of.
Well,
it doesn't look like Shadowrun. It doesn't look like Blade Runner. Well, and there can of course be different interpretations of it, but this one just didn't interest me from the get-go. And now all the constant delays, the talk of crunch, some of the weirdly anti-trans stuff that was part of like some of the ads, I have no interest in it, none. And they're not, like I said, they're just not helping their case.
Well,
at all.
I would say this: most people that are buying this game never heard of Cyberpunk before this. Probably they probably don't know it was a thing.
Sure.
So they don't give a shit that it may not be totally faithful to the roots of the, you know, the 80s tabletop stuff and license. There's
I'm not talking about being faithful to the 80s roots. I'm just simply talking about the aesthetic of it. Oh. It's not what I associate with.
It's a little bit too
Cyberpunk.
Light and bright.
Yes, exactly.
You want a more dark. You want it closer to
like I said, Shadowrun, like
Blade Runner.
Or Blade Runner.
How it
yes.
looks. Mm-hmm. Cyberpunk came after Blade Runner, correct? Blade Runner was probably the inspiration. Blade Runner was, what, 81, 82?
I mean, Cyberpunk kind of stemmed from Snow Crash and Neuromancer, but I don't know. I don't know in terms of the tabletop.
Blade Runner was 82, Cyberpunk. I'm just curious because it was all around that same time, early 80s, that all that stuff came up. God, how good is Blade Runner? Now I just want to watch Blade Runner again. How fucking fantastic. I want to see the sequel. I heard the sequel is like really
you
great.
You never saw 2049?
No, I didn't yet.
Oh my fucking God, Pat. Wow.
Okay. I saw the director's cut of Blade Runner again, I want to say. The complete cut finally. I want to say I saw it a year ago. I don't know if it was on Prime or somewhere, but...
It's one of the few sequels that I can like look at and say, this is actually potentially better than the original. And I think the original Blade Runner is one of the best movies. Our friend... Granddaddy John D.
I'm going to bring up John Lee because he loves Blade Runner.
He does. He's also of the mindset that the sequel may actually be better than the original. That's not something you hear about movies in general. That's not something that fans of old movies easily or readily admit. You've got to watch 2049.
Oh,
holy
no.
shit,
dude. Well, I'm not like a huge diehard Blade Runner fan, but I appreciate like it's a fantastic movie, obviously.
Yeah, I saw that in theaters on like three edibles. It was mind-blowing.
Were they really re-released it in the 90s?
No, 2049.
Oh, 2049. Three times? It's a long...
No, on three edibles.
It's like two... Oh.
So one time.
It's like 2.5 hours. Yeah, that movie is still... I bring that up, like, that was a movie that should never have been made. Like, a huge... What was the budget? The budget was, between $150 and $185 million. So a huge blockbuster budget for a cult movie from 1982 that we're going to do a sequel to that... is not going to make a profit by any stretch of the imagination. It didn't. When you look at it, with the market, there's no way it made a profit. It lost money. So it's like you're lucky that you saw that movie made because it should not have been made on a budget like that. So yeah, I'll check it out at some point. I want to see old replicant man, spoilers, Harrison Ford. Come in.
So good.
To that. They're still doing Indiana Jones 5, by the way, with Harrison Ford. They want to do that. I mean, they could have done 4 and 5 15 years ago when Harrison Ford could still walk around, you know. I mean, he's still around. He's in shape for like a, you know, 75-year-old, however old he is. He's in great shape, but I mean, come on, man. I don't want to see Indiana Jones in what, the 1970s is going to be or early 80s at this point? Whenever they place the movie, they'll probably place it like early 70s, I'm guessing. That's what they'll place the movie, like 35 years later.
He's 78.
God, it looks good, though.
Yeah,
I just love that. Not to go off on Harrison Ford, I just love that he couldn't give a shit for his cameo in Rise of Skywalker. He couldn't be bothered to even shave for it. It was fantastic. He couldn't bother to do his hair. It's like, all right, you got me for 45 minutes. Let's knock this out. Like, you can tell, like, he didn't give a shit about it. He just showed up. And it's probably the best part of the movie, by the way, is when he showed up. That was probably the highlight of the movie, that whole scene that our pal Yoshi basically did. That was the best. That's life.
I have a feeling that I will never see that movie.
I would actually think that's the one chance we will have to see a director's cut release of a Star Wars movie. Will be that movie, because that to me would be like the closest thing to the something like the Zack Snyder cut, Ian, of Justice League. Big news, Ian. You like that segue, huh?
That was a good one.
Did you see that coming?
That was very good. Jared Leto is going to be in the Justice League Snyder cut. His take on Joker, which is just, I mean, it's insane.
It's abysmal.
So they're bringing him back to shoot additional scenes for this. This isn't a cut anymore.
This
is something different. They're taking old, I mean, it's not a director's cut, and
it's a special edition, basically. It's a George Lucas special edition.
I don't even think it's that. I mean, it's going to be 4 hours. They're shooting additional scenes. They're putting characters in it that weren't in it originally. Even if this does well, you can't say, you can't look at it and go, well, see, he should have been able to do it his way the whole time. Because that's not what it is. This is no longer his original vision. This is some fucking masturbatory ego project, is what it is.
So they're bringing back Affleck, which I guess will be the last stuff that Affleck shoots as Batman, which is interesting. Ray Fisher's coming back, Cyborg.
I thought they were bringing him back for...
Oh, yeah, Flashpoint might come back. Mm-hmm. That's right. So they're bringing back Affleck, Ray Fisher, who famously most of his stuff got cut out, like his whole whatever arc he was supposed to have in Justice League when Joss Whedon came on, and now they are battling even... Like behind the scenes, like Ray Fisher is basically saying Joss Whedon is a piece of shit.
He is a piece of shit.
Treating me like garbage. And like now his castmates are basically like backing him up, saying, yeah, this was. This. So basically, there's like an internal war with Warner Brothers now. So that people are surprised that Ray Fisher was even brought back because of that. Because he's been so outspoken, like, this guy's a fucking piece of shit.
He is a piece of shit. Whedon's a piece of shit, and Snyder's a piece of shit. There's no fucking good guys here.
Well, he likes Snyder a lot better, Ray Fisher. It sounds like Snyder at least works better with actors. Like, he doesn't treat them like total garbage. Sure. He might be a garbage filmmaker, but you know. Then they brought back, speaking of garbage, Amber Heard. They brought her back. I thought she had scenes in the first trailer. I guess they shot more stuff with her, you know, who abused fucking Johnny Depp and tried to pretend like he was abusing her. So the problem now with this is that, like you said, this is not a movie anymore. This is not a director's cut. This is just something totally different. So we wouldn't be able to judge this better or worse when this comes out here. But I hate that, though, that this is, they're trying to, what are they, they're trying to connect this more to the Suicide Squad movie. Not the new one, the one that came out 3 years ago.
Yeah, that was
like, what's the fucking point?
That was the only other thing I had to say. So we're finally getting a Snyder cut of the movie, and they're filming new scenes that are going to link it back to another disaster of a movie that was so bad that there's already a reboot less than like 3 years after
almost out. 4 years. Suicide Squad came out August 2016. So they're trying to connect to a movie that came out before Justice League came out. They're trying to connect it back somehow, which is a garbage movie. I watched Suicide Squad, and it's not good. I mean, I know it was more successful than these other movies. It was, and that was probably just because for Harley Quinn alone. Let's be honest; like, that's the only reason people saw that movie. No one saw it for Will Smith or any of the other fucking characters. Boomerang Man, entertaining, but so the whole thing doesn't make any sense at all. Like, none of this makes any sense to me anymore. It's just to have some comic fans go, "Oh, see what happens when you follow the original." It's like, no, this is not any vision. This is like, I've never heard.
It doesn't matter how bad this turns out. You're going to have plenty of people who are like, "This is the best thing ever."
You really think those are like are real like DC Comics fans saying that, or that it's like they're just weird like Zack Snyder cultists that have popped up?
I don't know. I don't care.
Were these people all? Were they rooting for Zack Snyder when Sucker Punch came out? Were they rooting for him then? Hey. Fuck me in the ear.
Moving on up.
All right,
Arcade 1UP is releasing something that it's currently doing a Kickstarter for something that I think is kind of interesting.
Oh, it's going to come out, probably. It's definitely
going to come out.
They killed their goal.
Called the Infinity Game Table. And basically what it is it's a tablet flat screen TV monitor, whatever, that you that has removable legs, so you can put it on a pre-existing table or you can stand it up, and it's you know, meant to be a replacement for board games. And I think it's a, you know, it's not a bad idea, especially as board games get more and more popular. They take up a lot of space in a person's house. This is a pretty good way to, you know, truncate the collection, keep everything right there. It's going to have Wi-Fi. So if you have one, I like that Arcade 1-Up is doing stuff with Wi-Fi now, like they did with the NBA Jam cabinet. They're doing it with this as well, so that anyone who has one, you'll be able to play board games with other people who have one if you don't want to play it locally. I think it's a great idea. Unfortunately, I don't think the games that come with it are particularly fantastic.
It's going to cost you... There's a 24-inch table and a 36-inch table.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're like...
Excuse me, 32-inch.
They're 400 and 600?
Let's see. Well the MSRP for the 24-inch is going to be 600. You get $100 off on the Kickstarter at 500. And then the 32-inch... is going to be MSRP 800. You get it for 700. So there's a $200 difference between the two. I'm guessing if you're going to shell out that much money, you're going to fucking go for the bigger one, because that's the pat math. That's like 50% bigger screen, 32 to 24 inch. That's a lot more space. 24 inch screen is not that big to justify a fucking table. A 24 inch screen is not that big.
It'll be interesting to see how supported this is. Obviously, the games that are... I think it's a good idea, but the games that are on it are going to be what sells it.
So they got licenses. So they got like Monopoly on this. They got like Connect 4, Hungry Hippos, Trouble.
So
they got the class Scrabble.
Unfortunately, what you get free access to is the collection of Hasbro games. And if you enjoy that sort of stuff, it's not a knock against you, but it's not what I enjoy. It's all the, you know, the
Candyland,
the luck based stuff,
Chutes and Ladders,
Yahtzee, Monopoly, which I hate. So I would love to see something like this,
generic chess
that had like native support for like Roll 20, which is like an online D&D it's like a website that lets you play D&D online and it displays maps. I think there's a lot of potential use for something like this when it comes to board games. I just don't think it's being fully realized with Hasbro family games.
Is your mind changed when I tell you it comes with Moncala, our favorite new game?
I do love Moncala.
From Clubhouse 51 Games Worldwide.
Very good game.
Very fun game. Okay, it has tactile some sort of force feedback. No monthly subscriptions. There's two speakers on it. Impact water resistant. It better damn be for $700. Portable design. I guess, yeah, if you take the legs off, you can put a carrying case, whatever. And 50 plus games, and then I'm sure they'll have you be able to fucking buy new ones eventually. I'm sure that's part of the business model of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure.
It is.
This is a lot of money. This is definitely a luxury item. That's the thing.
Very much a luxury item. If this was like, and I'm not saying that they should have been able to get to this price, but if this was like $300 for like the bigger model, I'd totally be interested in it, but I can't justify fucking $800 on something like this.
$700 right now, but $800 once it's out for the bigger one. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
You said if it was $300 for those,
if it was
small one,
even for the small one, I might be more interested in it. But yeah, I just think...
Here's the thing.
I think it's a good idea, but the it's too expensive. And if this was, like I said, if this had good integration with something like D&D or like the more complicated Euro-style board games, like the ones with the thick rule books and shit like that, it would probably be a value proposition, because a lot of those games are fairly expensive. They can cost 50 to 100, you know, $100,
sure,
depending on how many pieces. But
most of these games don't cost you anything.
That's exactly it. The games that are being included in here, the Hasbro Family Game Night stuff, is stuff that you can go and find at any garage sale for $5.
Or flea market. Like, you can buy Sorry, the giveaway, Yahtzee. I think my parents will have theirs from like 1960. It's that old. Battleship. And a lot of this stuff is simple. It's like, play a tic-tac-toe game. Sudoku. This is stuff that you can play on your phone for free. Like, now you're getting into, okay, how many games really are you replacing here? You're not replacing 50 games. Maybe you're replacing like 20 or 25, and then the value proposition drops.
When you look at something like Clubhouse Games,
there's a coloring thing. thing, a coloring book thing.
When you look at something like Clubhouse Games, you go, okay, I'm never going to play all 40 of these games, but it's costing you
40
bucks. And, you know, even if you're playing five of those games, okay, you can make that you can be like, yeah, this is worth it, especially with online play and stuff like that. You can't make the same comparison to something that's 800 bucks. Like, all of these games would have to be something that you would play regularly.
Sure. And you don't know how much they're going to charge for, like you said, if they got a D&D license, how much are they going to charge you
right
for that?
So the interesting stuff that could potentially happen to this would be more money. Apparently, this sort of thing was attempted to a few years back, not by them, but apparently, I never heard of them, but an article that was talking about this talked about... I think they were called like living room PCs or coffee table PCs that basically were that were essentially trying to do this. And back then they were even more expensive. They were like, you know, 1,500, you know, up to 2,000. So this is cheaper, but it's still not cheap enough to make this something that I can see a lot of people buying.
How are you going to hide your part of the board? Is this going to come with little cardboard things to put up for Battleship? Because they at least Texas Hold'em. How am I not going to see your cards?
I would imagine that you'd probably just use some sort of divider.
When it gets to that weird point, just
do it the normal way.
Get a pack of cards. No, right.
Exactly.
For games that cheap, like, I don't... Let's put it this way. Yes, it's cool that you're including Tic-Tac-Toe, the simplest game ever, or chess, but I'm not spending $600 to play chess on a big fucking... luxury item board. It doesn't make any sense anymore.
There are lots of games that would benefit from something like this, that would benefit from losing the setup and breakdown, but as far as I can see, none of those games are what's being supported. So I think it's, like I said, I think it's a good idea, but I don't think they're going after the types of games that would truly benefit from this.
I see this, to me, as this is your smartphone just blown up. That's exactly what it is. Just blow up your smartphone, because a lot of the... I guarantee you, despite all the games that are included here, so I'm not poo-pooing this idea entirely, but for the price that they're asking, wow, you gotta love playing these board games. I mean, like, really love playing these board games. You gotta love playing Trouble or playing Hungry Hippos. Isn't part of the fun of these board games is the tactile feedback of Hungry Hippos, that you, like, you hit the thing and the marbles go in the mouth? Like, you lose that when it's, when I can't picture something like Operation, playing Operation. I can't imagine wanting to play a virtual Operation versus having the actual tweezers and doing it.
Of these games that are announced here, like Monopoly, Scrabble, Trivial Pursuit, Chutes and Ladders, Candyland, Yahtzee, the only one that I would play regularly would be Scrabble, and I would also play Trivial Pursuit. But
yeah, I would think that
I don't need an $800 Scrabble board.
I think board games will never, ever totally die out the way people thought books would. People like feeling some of this stuff and the pieces. And that's part of the entire experience. It's like, yes, like Monopoly is a cold game to begin with. But at least, like, you have your little houses, you have your money, you have your cards. Like, there's stuff to organize. But this is just, like, all automatic. It's like playing on the NES game. There's no charm anymore. It's, oh, you land on a stuff, pay the money, move on. Like... part of the process of a board game is taking the time to relax and to do, like, the little bookkeeping stuff. That's part of the experience to me.
Right.
And that's totally eliminated from this.
Sure.
All right. What else is going on, Ian? We got Fire Emblem from the Famicom being ported to the Switch.
So, the original Fire Emblem game, Shadow Dragon, the original version of it is being ported to the Switch, digital release. They're also offering a physical release that I believe it comes with a digital code, but it comes with a replica NES cartridge.
I'm in now.
It's like $50, comes with like a replica NES cartridge and a bunch of other neat stuff. A lot of places are saying this is the first time this game's ever been seen in the U.S. In its original form, yes, but everyone seems to forget, at least in these articles, that Shadow Dragon did get a DS release in the U.S. They kind of remade it for the DS, and that got a release. So it's not 100% the first time it's ever been here. This is interesting to me, because I know Fire Emblem is popular. But Nintendo really, really seems to delight in shoving Fire Emblem down people's throats. There are a lot of Fire Emblem games that did not come out here that people want to see.
There's like five on the Super Nintendo, or six. This is ridiculous.
There's a lot of Fire Emblem games that have not come out that people want to see. The fact that they are going all the way back to the earliest version doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You know, it's going to be the least feature rich, the shallowest story. It's just... It seems weird to me that they would do this one and not one of the later ones, like a Super Famicom one that people actively want. What drives me nuts about this, though, is that Fire Emblem always seems to get this precedence with Nintendo. Mother 3. Like, release a fucking game that's never been translated here that people are actually clamoring for. No one out there is clamoring for like I said, the article's got this wrong. No one's clamoring for another way to play Shadow Dragon. No one is. But the only thing I can hope for is that if we're seeing stuff like this, if Nintendo is actually doing these translations and bringing stuff over here, maybe there is still hope for something like Mother 3. I mean, it certainly seems like there's more hope to see other Fire Emblem games translated that did not make it here the first time around.
The only thing I think about is that this is the closest thing to an ego project I've seen Nintendo do, where this is like, yes, this will appeal to like a hardcore base maybe in Japan, but most of the people in the U.S. will be like, what is this, what are you doing?
Like I said, Fire Emblem's popular, but its popularity here does not warrant the amount of attention Nintendo gives it.
Yes, this is almost like, let's see, I'm looking at who is the president 2 presidents ago, or 3 presidents ago. Was it like a dying wish from a past Nintendo president that was like, oh, you must keep Fire Emblem alive and put, you know, 20 characters in Smash Brothers, you know, like, and keep, I mean, because it's the scales are just so off versus anything else. The scales of, let's push this so much, but it never was in North America, but we're going to push this till you like it. Like, we'll just keep pushing it and pushing it, and you have to absorb it. Like, there's no other property. I can think of that. The imbalance is this much between North America and Japan, where it's nuts.
And I realize the Mother fan base is kind of an instance of, you know, a smaller fan base, but very vocal. Mm-hmm. But at least there's been years of people asking for Mother 3 to get ported.
And as long as they're putting out games consistently, right, you know, in that universe. And plus, it wouldn't take you that much time to just do the translation and push it out. Like,
a professional level translation for it.
This I'm scratching my head when I see something like this. This isn't like, oh, we're going to put out a collection of all the Super Nintendo games. This is like, we're going to give you the original game to play. So even if you like this series, be like, why would I want to play this? Like, people might say that. I'm not saying it's a bad series. It's interesting from what I know. But
from what I've played of it, it's a perfectly fine series, and I'm always going to be happy that more games are getting translated and made accessible to people. I just think Nintendo's priorities in this instance are very strange.
But maybe this leads you to Mother, like maybe. You hope maybe this is like the first step of that. They want to get out Fire Emblem stuff first. All right, Ian, this is a cute little story of Mario Kart Live. It's a full motion VR rig that was set up by best dad ever, according to CNET, roadshow by CNET. So he set up a full, like, this is like almost like a, like you'd see like a fully moving arcade in the 90s, like the whole thing moves. So he there's a screen on the screen. The kid watches the racer in first person, almost like you're playing an arcade game. It's just like I say, there's a screen mounted to this VR rig that's like, it has like pneumatic lifts and it's like moving around. It's incredible. I wish I had an engineer dad with like, you know, a month and a half of free time to put this together.
Yeah, it's,
it turns in 360.
That's insane.
I'd be surprised to see how well this sells over the holidays. Like, if there's gonna be, usually there's a big toy every Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. Every year, like, there's a big one. With this weird year, who the hell knows? But I can see Nintendo really pushing this on TV for the holiday season and selling a lot of these to kids, and because I really think this is like an extremely creative idea, obviously. And
I think it's extremely creative. I think it's very cool. I have no idea how well it will sell. I think a lot of people, my personal opinion on this is, I think a lot of people will take a look at it and go, this is, we'll do the same thing I did. They'll look at it and go, this is very cool, but is this something that I can ever practically use?
Sure. We're also not, you know, 10 years old.
No, but it doesn't mean I wouldn't want to use it. It comes down to the fact that I think parents will still look at it and go, this is something that is very much, targeted towards middle upper class. You need to live in a house. You need to have the space for it. If you have to constantly set it up and break it down, it's not going to get used. And I just don't think, especially like, I mean, if you live someplace, I want to know how is this going to do in Japan, where typically space is at a premium?
Oh, horribly, probably.
It's like I said, it's a neat idea, but I think once you factor in all the logistics, I think, or at least I would hope, that parents buying this are thinking long and hard about whether or not this is ever actually going to be practically usable.
The price might be a little. I mean, it's $100, which I still think for what you get. Is a lot in terms of having a house.
You get the game, you get the cart, you get the setup. I don't think it's too much. I just think it's practically not usable.
Well, keep in mind, you don't have to be upper middle class to have a house in most parts of the U.S. Remember, we live in San Diego, where you have to be for the most part.
Sure.
For most parts of the U.S., houses are cheap. You know, you'll have the space. But no, it's $100, but then you have to make sure, like, well, does my sister get one, or my brother? Or then does my friend, if you get two, I can imagine if you get at least two of these guys, I can't imagine if you had like five of these things, like going, that would be nuts all your friends.
I think you can do up to four.
Okay. Or up to four. Imagine if up to four of these were going at one time. It'd be insane to actually see that happen.
Sure.
And so, like, if I was 10 years old or 12 years old, I'd better get this freaking thing. Because this combined, when I was a kid, radio control cars and video games, and that was not something I ever saw being feasible, combine those things. And yeah, this to me could be a huge, huge, huge seller this holiday season. Hell, if people were spending $200 on fucking Tickle Me Elmo's that fell off the back of a truck 20 years ago, they're gonna buy it for your kid. They'll spend $100. It's not unreasonable 2020 to spend $100 on your kid. It isn't.
Oh.
So let's see. I wonder if these will be sold at Home Circuit. Are these available right now? Like, can I get this on Amazon? I almost feel like buying one for myself around Christmas. Just be like, oh, I want to just try this out. Just be cutesy with it. Put it in the backyard.
Well, you can play it against computer opponents, so yeah.
Oh, it came out the 16th. Sure. I heard one argument. Well, it's like, oh, you're not really focusing on the cart while you're looking at... Yeah, but everyone else is. Mm-hmm. And it's still the idea that you're actually having to set up the course, and it's going around a real course. It's better than virtual reality. It's reality.
You don't got to sell me on it. I think it's an awesome idea.
I'm trying to sell the people that didn't think it was a big deal.
Sure.
I'm like, do you have no imagination about why people are excited about this? It came out the 16th, so it's barely been out. So you're going to see a lot more wacky videos like this. But this VR rig thing is incredible when you take a look at it. Let's see what else is happening here.
Phil Spencer is happening.
Phil Spencer hints at Xbox Game Pass streaming sticks. It's the next evolution of the Microsoft, we don't give a shit about how you play our games model that media been touting for the last few years. That's come to light here.
So teases at potential streaming sticks, no console required. So this would literally just be streaming the games. At which point, I still don't think that the infrastructure is there to make this super viable. However, Microsoft's Game Pass is a very nice package in terms of what is offered to you. But my interest in Game Pass comes from the fact that you can actually download these games and play them off of a hard drive, so you don't have to deal with the lag or anything like that. As much as I don't think that this would be... particularly a great way to play games, I do think that it would probably be more popular than Stadia.
Oh, absolutely.
Simply because of the name behind it and of what it's offering. Those games are free with your subscription to Game Pass, as opposed to having to buy, you know, the individual games. I still think it's a much better idea than Stadia.
Yeah, they who knows how many other studios they buy out, Microsoft, so then they'll be the only game in town for some of these games if they don't decide they can be anywhere else. It's interesting because I think if they saturate the market, or at least if they get people used to the idea of, well, we're just giving you different ways to play Game Pass. That's basically at this point what we're doing. You can play it on your PC, on your tablet, on whatever Xbox Series S, Series X, Series P, Series B console you decide to buy. We don't give a shit. So here's another option. Here's this little stick to put on your TV. And we don't even care if you think it's crappy. It's just another option we're giving you. One of 10 different options you can play our games. And that's, if anyone's going to pull it off, it's them, because they're way ahead of, it seems like, on this. And Google Stadia, which we'll bring up a little bit in a second, it seems like that's going to be an afterthought more sooner than we potentially think at this point.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Speaking of Stadia was in the news
for a bad reason.
Stadia probably had the most coverage, or it was the most talked about it's been since it launched earlier this week, when Alex Hutchinson, who is the creative director SG&E Montreal Studio, came out and had a fairly spicy take on the these were the tweets. The first tweet was streamers worried about getting their content pulled because they used music they didn't pay for should be more worried by the fact that they're streaming games they didn't pay for as well. It's all gone as soon as publishers decide to enforce it. The real truth is the streamers should be paying the developers and publishers of the games they stream. They should be buying a license fee like any real business and paying for the content they use. I mean, eat my asshole. Bad fucking take. People do buy the games that they're playing, and obviously we can go into the whole aspect that streaming games is free advertisement for the games. This guy, after soaking up the replies for a couple of hours, then tweeted something. I mean, I can't imagine. I have no idea why you could be this tone deaf to the situation. But his tweet after was, "Well, anyway, gonna hop online and stream some Fall Guys. Who's up for it?" Fall Guys, admittedly, by the people who made it, is a massive success because of streamers. Among Us, a game that came out in 2018, 2 years ago, and is now, you know, the hot game that everyone talks about. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar are, you know, playing it online with constituents and other streamers. That was a game that is as big as it is now because streamers picked it up and ran with it. It's a very weird take, and this guy's had some interesting takes in the past before. I'm not going to get into his past. I'm not going to beat on him more than just this, but this guy is not...
He's already been dragged by the internet.
Yeah, he's been dragged by the internet, and I mean, this guy is already not known for great takes, but it's just... And the problem was, is in his header initially, where it now says that he is a creative director at SG&E Montreal Studio. He had creative director at Stadia, which led a lot of people to think that he was in charge of something at Stadia, that he was, instead of being a creative director for a company that is now under the umbrella of Stadia, he was kind of...
He was fluffing himself up his position?
Yeah, and I always think that's a very bad look, and it's shitty, and it's definitely something that affects my opinion of people. And this is one of those instances where it blows up in your face to the point where it was talked about so much that Google came out and were like, we're not associated with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had to add the all opinions are my own. And I have a feeling that it has not been an enjoyable time for him at work since this happened. Obviously, people need to watch what they say online, but especially watch what you say online when you're going to associate yourself with something that you're really not as associated with as you think you are.
I don't understand why
you're just
do
an
that.
Idiot at every turn.
Yeah,
I really have nothing more to say on that, it's fucked. It's fucked that Stadia is, you know, the most it's been in the news was for a negative reason because someone was associating themselves with it in a way that they probably should not have been.
Yeah, that's what Matt, our buddy Matt McMuscle says. He said, congratulations for actually getting Google Stadia trending for the first time since its initial unveiling. And this isn't obviously the type of PR they want. All right, so here's my thoughts. Streamers worry about getting their content pulled because they use music distribution. It's gone as soon as publishers decide to enforce it. Well, here's the thing, Alex. They haven't decided to enforce it.
Yeah.
And Alex, I will agree with you with this. It's not decided legally because it's never gone to court. to have legal precedent. It still hasn't. But by default, since publishers haven't really gone after people, they're okay with it. Even though legally they're probably not saying it's okay. It's like, we understand the ecosystem. We understand that you're not robbing us of income by seeing people play our games. Remember when people went after Nintendo for that a few years ago when they did their stupid, when they tried to do their, well, join our network so you can play games. That the backlash against Nintendo was huge because they didn't understand, Nintendo Japan didn't understand, like, this is just the reality of it.
Well, and that's another problem with this, is the way he worded it was definitely taken as a slight against streamers as being these lazy idiots who, you know, mooch off of someone else's hard work. I'm not a streamer precisely because I tried streaming, and I'm going to be realistic with you. Streaming is hard work. It's not easy. If you're not good at it, it's not easy. It's something that you can take naturally to, and then it's going to be more enjoyable and maybe easy, but it's not easy for everyone. It's not like there's nothing involved. You have to keep the audience entertained. You have to constantly keep talking and have interesting topics coming up, and it can be exhausting. Without the games, there'd be nothing to stream, but it's... Like I said, it's been proven and shown that it is a mutually beneficial relationship.
Sure.
So to come out against it, it's just, what's up your ass, man?
Yeah, I think the second statement really did him in more about paying.
Yes.
I'm serious. No. Pay the developers and publishers. That's where it's like.
That's the one that got quote tweeted.
That's nuts. Like, I don't. Like, no one would go for that. The game publishers wouldn't be stupid enough to ask for that. It would ruin them. To do that, and how would you even do that? Well, here's a license. You got to pay us after you bought the game. Pay us another $5 to stream it. Like that would be like a really weird bridge to cross. Yeah, that would be like a weird guy. I can't imagine how that even go legally. That'd be like a 4D minefield to cross if we ever got to that point. That's nuts. It's nuts.
And it also kind of shone a light on, I think, you know, there are people who will watch game streams in lieu of, I guess, playing something. But
sure.
I don't think anyone has actually, I would find, I can only speak for myself, I have purchased games that I had never heard of because people have streamed them and I've heard of them that way. There has never been a game that I was going to purchase that I then decided not to purchase because someone was streaming it. I just don't think that's an argument that you can make. I don't think streamers are taking away sales.
It's the same thing like with piracy of movies. They always say, like, well, all these people are pirating movies.
Weren't going to buy them.
Prove that there's a loss of income? Because a lot of those years where there was a lot more piracy, if you look at ticket sales, it went up for some of those years. Like, let's say piracy was huge for movies like 10 years ago. Like, they probably peaked around famously when they leaked the fucking shitty Wolverine movie in like 2009. Like, the fucking movie got leaked and it was horrible. Yeah, like maybe for something like that, it might have affected it, but that's like the weird exception. Most times it's just people looking at awful, you know, screeners, or someone, you know, overseas, like just doing a bad video in the back of the room, or somehow they get some sort of weird digital early cut of it. I'm not going to see a weird thing on my computer versus going to a movie I really want to see. Like, I'm not going to not see Avengers, Infinity War in the theaters, like, because I saw, like, that's where you can never prove that to me.
Right.
Never.
There are some people who will, you know, be like, oh, well, I could watch this person do Last of Us 2 instead of playing it. I've said that, and then I didn't watch Last of Us 2, but I wasn't going to buy Last of Us 2 in the first place. And the amount of people who may actually skip out on buying a game because they can watch a streamer do it, I'm sure there are some of those people, but they've got to be very, very few. And the big thing is unlike streaming a movie or an illegal download of a movie or music or something like that, the experience is not the same. Video games are an inherently interactive medium.
Sure.
And lots of them are more and more, you know, like interactive movies at this point, but you cannot say that watching a game is the same as playing it. They're not transferring that experience wholesale.
Yeah, it's more interactive than the music, where you just listen to it. Everyone listens to the same, or everyone watches movies the same. I think the biggest case in point on this is in terms of, like, people will buy things they want to buy. Is the NES Classic Edition comes out, and they could not make enough of them in order to to get into people's hands. And these are games that you could emulate for 20 years. You got your fucking, everyone's saying, well, why don't you just get your RetroPie? Or why don't you just this? It doesn't matter. People want to buy a product. They want to buy a product. They want to buy a product.
Yeah.
That's it. Doesn't matter how you think about it. They want to buy a product, an official product. They want to endorse it. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Sure.
All right. Ian.
Pat.
You know, the Nintendo Switch has been struggling. As we know, it's only sold, like, what, 60 million units in 3.5 years, something like that.
It's doing real poorly.
It's doing poorly. It's only, I don't know, done five to six times the amount of that the Wii U did in its lifetime. It's really struggling along. So, there was a, speaking of spicy takes, there was a take that came out here from analyst Michael Pachter, who is known most famously, he used to have a game trailer show and used to talk about video game stuff and, you know, what he thought was going to be happening in the industry and how Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo were going to be addressing things. And, of course, most of the time he's wrong when it comes to these things. But some reason, he's known as the professional baby boomer wearing his professional suit, hot takes video game analyst.
I swear that saying stupid, shitty things must get him hard, because at this point I can only think that it's a kink. He loves to double down on this stuff. And, I mean, this was one of the guys, along with, you know, many people, who tried to say that the Switch was doomed from the beginning.
Many people.
Who is now coming out and saying, now that the Switch is successful, that this is his... God, this is... I hate the fact that we have to give this guy attention, because it's the only reason he's still around, but at the same point in time... Anyway... I don't really understand the whole hybrid concept. I'm going to intervene here. It's because you're a fucking moron. Plenty of people understand the hybrid concept. Continuing. I don't think most people play it in both modes. It's because you're not thinking.
How do you know that?
How do you know? I would say that maybe 20% of Switch owners play both modes. Why? Why would you say that?
What research do you have, Mr. Pachter?
What do you have to back that up? And I think most Switch owners play it in handheld only. Again, please show your work. So I honestly don't understand the whole point of the hybrid. Who cares? Play it as a handheld. And Nintendo isn't that smart, he continues, so you never know what they will do next. But I think the smart thing would be to get rid of the Switch console and only have the Switch Lite. Get rid of the docking station, get rid of playing on the TV, maybe offer a Fire Stick-style dongle for those who don't want to play it, who do want to play it on the TV. You're a fucking moron. And I do think that, yes, it by nature of how things are, people probably do play more in one mode or the other. But as far as I can tell, it's entirely split. And just speaking from personal experience, when I first got my Switch, I did play it almost entirely in handheld mode. And guess what? Then I remember that I could dock it, and now I play it a ton in docked mode. Vani went from playing it almost entirely in docked mode to now using it as a handheld. People, why get rid of the option, Michael? Pachter, what's the benefit of getting rid of this option here? That's the other thing. Is it really going to save them much money? You know, all this money that they're... It's an absolutely infuriating statement.
I don't want to make this about Michael Pachter himself, because to me, I'm punching down, because Michael Pachter has little brain power when it comes to these things, because he's been super wrong on the Switch and other things in the past and not held accountable for this stuff. But
that's why we should mention him, because no one ever fucking holds him accountable.
But... The lack of just any business, not even savvy, common sense to know that Nintendo would be absolute idiots to not have a console hooking up to a TV would create a huge vacuum of sales that anyone else could try to capitalize on if they didn't alone.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that to yourself? After you sold 100 million Wiis, you realize we may not be able to get that entirely back, but we'll be able to get back some of it. And so far, they've gotten back most of it, because I didn't think they would sell 60 million. I said about 40 million max, which still would have been a great success.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to smash that, and they may get to 80 million when all is said and done, which would be incredible.
On track to pass the Xbox One, I think, sometime early next year.
I mean, this is an incredible comeback for Nintendo. People have said this is going to be a success, didn't think they would do this well like this.
No, I thought the Switch was going to do well, but I don't remember what I said, but when we talked about it, I know I didn't say more than 50 million.
I mean, this is nuts. And we're like in the middle ages of this. We can go another 2-3 years
sure.
on this console. So the lack of understanding how a business works and functions and you call yourself an analyst. That's what annoys me the most. And saying Nintendo isn't that smart when Nintendo has more money than God does in the bank. Like, I don't understand. Like, how are you assessing to say that Nintendo isn't that smart? Like, and why do you think that they would make more money as a handheld only when a hybrid, you get the best of both? And you can have an alternate line with the Switch Lite, which has done okay, but not done nearly as well as having the hybrid concept. Especially when situations like this, the past year, you say something like that when we can't even travel like we used to use just a handheld only. When a lot of people are home, so having a TV, naturally they'd want to do that more. So,
Michael, I work in retail, and I can safely tell you that every time we get a Switch Lite in, it sits around for a couple of weeks, and every time we get a regular Switch in, it sells immediately. Why? Because people want the ability to play it on their TV.
I've been playing Super Mario Run on my TV. Big screen, you can see what's going on. Yes, handheld to me is a nice bonus when it comes to the Switch. I know there's people that bought it primarily as a handheld. To me, that was always the nice bonus. A bonus that I could probably... that now I have it, it can't go away, because that was the sale and appeal of the Switch, and that's why it has the name Switch, and that's what all the marketing was from day one, is that it's a hybrid, and it's original, and that's part of the identity, and I can't understand that an analyst would not see that all of this fits together. Like, this is the name and concept now was brilliant. At first, we're like, Switch, oh, we get it, but who cares? Now we're like, wow, it makes perfect sense. You can't imagine a different name. It's nuts. Like, it's nuts that someone still talks to someone like this to get their opinion on anything. That they were so wrong at first about the Switch to begin with. They have the audacity now that it's a blazing success to say that Nintendo was not that smart. This doesn't mean Nintendo, giving Nintendo a hand job, but to say Nintendo is stupid, I don't understand how you could say that. They're not that smart. No, they're very smart. They're smarter than most other companies. Because if not, another company would have done what Nintendo is doing now.
Nintendo makes a lot of decisions that anger their fan base. They don't always make decisions that make sense to their fan base or their customers. But yes, the measure, if you want, I think it's acceptable here to look at the level of success a company has and equate that to how smart a company is. And by that metric, Nintendo is incredibly smart.
It's a consistency. You can have a flash in the pan product or an idea once, but to do it over decades and decades and years, they're not, yes, they're pissing off some people, but not enough that they're not buying Nintendo stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. They're pissing them off just because they know how great Nintendo usually is. It's like they're still batting above 300, Nintendo as a baseball hitter. In reality, they're batting like, 750. Three out of four decisions are probably really good and sound, and then the one-offs, the minority decisions, they don't like. So again, I brought this up before. There's a tipranks.com which ranks all these analysts out there, and Michael Pachter is right in the middle of the pack. His success rate is 56% on his recommendations, which is basically, I can do this myself, and I'll probably be a coin flip of picking winners or losers when it comes to, stock recommendations, things like that. So it doesn't mean anything. And most recently, he thought that the Intellivision Amico is going to sell 1 million units. It's going to sell in 2021, he said. So this is the person that you are interviewing. Stop interviewing him. Stop talking to him. Stop giving this guy any press when it comes to these things. To me, this is like the same thing as a sports analyst that, like Colin Cowherd, who's constantly wrong so much so that they're like Twitter accounts just to remind people how he's almost always wrong about things. But they're entertaining these sports people. But I don't think this is a person, that's entertaining too many people.
No, he's not. He's the type of guy who fucking gets high off his own farts.
He's the only guy out there that gave video games a time of day 10, 12 years ago, that somehow there was a little video game show based off of it that happened, and from that he's still in the limelight. That's what it comes down to. I finally said, speaking about next gen and what Nintendo could have in store, Patrick said, I'm not sure what we will see from the next generation. What a great analyst. If there will be upgrade to the processing power, they should at least put some flash memory in it so you can download some games and not to screw around with cartridges.
There is flash memory in it. You can download games.
You can add your own flash memory. And
it has memory built in. You can add more memory. I mean, he straight up doesn't have any idea what the fuck he's talking about. He's He's asking.
He's not sure if there will be an upgraded processing power. I guarantee you there will be an upgraded processing power on the Super Switch or whatever comes out.
It's very common for companies to release new systems and not upgrade anything.
Yeah, the Super Nintendo was exactly like the NES. They just stayed exactly the same on what was offered.
It just changed the cartridge.
Woo! All right. Well, the full interview isn't live yet. I didn't see it listed on GamingBolt.com there. But no, just stop listening to experts. Or if you're going to think someone's an expert, obviously you don't have to be right on everything. Ian and I have not been right on everything. But I'd say we have a better track record than someone like Michael Pachter when it comes to these.
I've been wrong on many things, but I also don't make my living as a fucking analyst. I'm a talking head on an opinion show.
But these people that are known as analysts almost never go back and admit they're wrong.
Oh no!
And almost never happens. Some of the good, better sports people can admit they're wrong, like on ESPN. They go, "Yeah, I was wrong about that." But they make their living off of projecting a superiority of knowledge when it comes to these things that does not really exist. They just have the louder voices, and you're going to say, "Oh, Pat, you need to have louder voices." Yes, but you look at someone's track record over time, and you look at. Get that chugging, Ian. You look at how reasonable their arguments are, or if they are batshit crazy. Because even if you are wrong, as long as you are reasonable, most people don't have a problem with that. But if you're batshit crazy like this, then we have a problem. And you have to question everything else that you come out and say. And that's the issue here. Like back when you know people were saying Nintendo should go third party on the Switch. Ian was on the podcast for a bit, I think, when he was still feeling his illness there. I had to rail against these idiots every other week by myself and be like, you are out of your mind if you think it'd be smarter for Nintendo to go third party. Like, you don't understand business at all. And it's fun for you to think about a PS4 Super Mario Brothers game, but aliens will invade before that happens. Like, that's what it comes down to. This portion of the CU podcast is brought to you by The Adventures of Giggle Squid. The Adventures of Giggle Squid is a junior novel that offers a unique approach to superhero-like origin stories. But rather than a child thinking they need a special serum or a radioactive spider bite to make them stand out, the story is about realizing they already have amazing untapped talents that they may not have discovered yet. The Adventures of Giggle Squid follows the story of Giggle's epic journey across the ocean to save little brother Ike from the grasp of a pirate sushi chef and his crew.
No!
With a strong influence from comic books and classic video games, the book includes over 20 beautiful hand-drawn images to help guide self-reading or enhance family bedtime stories, and is also printed with a tried-and-tested dyslexia-friendly font to aid those that may otherwise find reading difficult. And there's even a hidden Easter egg that pays homage to the Nintendo classic Metroid! So if you like comics, video games, and you have a little one in your life that likes them too, then The Adventures of Giggle Squid is your perfect choice. As well as the book itself, there's a fantastic collection of rewards for backers, including the adorable Giggle plushie. Ian, this is adorable.
I love plushies. It is. It's
cute. I read a lot of children's books growing up in the libraries. I used to borrow them. So if you have a little one in your life, you know, check it out. You can discover more by searching The Adventures of Giggle Squid on Kickstarter, clicking the link in the description below, or heading to gigglesquid.co.uk. Your support is vital for helping independent content creators bring their work to life. Head to Kickstarter now to secure your copy today. All right. Ian, on the CU podcast, we celebrate anniversaries on what? Fives
and zeros.
And big old O's. And that's it. No 19, no 12, no 37 or anything like that.
No, it's not necessary. I don't even celebrate my birthdays anymore on like the whole year's like in terms of like keeping track of my age. I've been telling people I'm 40 for like 5 years now.
Why don't you do that to yourself, Ian?
And as soon as I turn 40, I'll be telling people I'm 45.
PS2 turned 20.
PS2
in North America.
Turned 20 in North America. I have a lot of memory. It's funny. The PlayStation 2 was the last system I bought before I took, I would say, about a generation long break from gaming. Got back into it with the Xbox 360 when Pac-Man Championship Edition was released. I bought my 360 specifically for Pac-Man Championship Edition. I was still living in Buffalo when the PlayStation 2 came out.
Like how you measure everything in time by if you were in Buffalo.
I do. And I imported a PlayStation 2 from Japan. with a couple of games. It was expensive. And I was kind of under this idea in my head that, okay, well, they're going to be using DVD-ROMs. I was like, maybe there'll be subtitles for more games. The system was region-locked, and I ended up not importing much of anything because, of course, you know, these games weren't suddenly magically translated for importers. But the PlayStation 2, it's... The system itself, I think, is important because it's really, like... It's the best-selling system of all time. And it was, I think, really when video games became a truly socially acceptable thing.
155 million units.
It's absolutely insane. That's, I mean, we're... I don't want to say never.
I don't think we're going to see that again.
But I don't think we're going to see that again. Nintendo had faltered so poorly with the N64 that, honestly, the game... And I like the
They had GameCube. Zero momentum at that point.
Right. I like the GameCube. But the GameCube could have been the greatest system in the world, and I still don't think that would have been enough to dethrone Sony. That's just how bad the N64 fucked up Nintendo's momentum. And it wasn't a failure in the same way that the Wii U was, but it had the problem of being a failure after, at the same time that Sony's PlayStation 1 did gangbusters. Sony was just entering the market, and here was this new person, and they did insanely well. There was no way their follow-up wasn't going to be crazy. You saw the PlayStation 2 on TV in music videos. It was
Sony was pushing it.
Yeah, you know, it came up in rap lyrics, and sure, other video game systems have in the past. You know, Biggie mentioned Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, but it was just everywhere. It was fucking everywhere.
Huge marketing campaign, obviously.
It was. I mean, especially as time went on with that system, a couple of years into it, it was hard to walk into a friend's house and not see a PS2. Like, just everyone had them. One of the things I think that really helped the PS2 was not only the goodwill that Sony had going into that generation with the PlayStation 1, but also the fact that it was a DVD player. It came out... I think we forget about that, but when it came out, DVD players were just becoming a common thing.
Just before, because they were super expensive. And
yes, they were. That's what I was getting at. They were very, very expensive. And I think my DVD player, because I bought it like the first year, it was really big. I think my DVD player on sale ran me $200 to $250. A PlayStation 2 alone would run you $250.
Well, it was released at, what, 300 when it first came out?
Was it? Okay.
But then it went down after that. So at the time, I remember this. At the time, it was about the same price as your lower-level DVD player.
Sure.
They were about the same. And obviously, Sony knew that. They're like, well, you can buy a DVD player that just plays movies, or you can buy a PS2 that plays movies and games. And I think that's not... I'm not going to say a chunk of them, but that definitely entered into people's heads when that happened. Because in 2000... DVDs were like a brand new thing still to a lot of people. There weren't a lot of DVDs that existed in the year 2000. I know, because I worked at Suncoast Motion Picture Company, and our DVD section, when I first started, was like a vertical shelf, like that wall. That was the DVD section.
And a lot of it, and I mean, you'll probably agree with this, because I bought my DVD player. I had graduated. I had money. I was walking around the mall. One of the things that adopted DVD very, very quickly early on was anime. Lots and lots of anime DVDs. And I remember walking into a Suncoast and seeing a lot of anime. And yeah, there were normal movies too, but anime was a large chunk of it. And I saw Cowboy Bebop, and I was like, I want to watch this. So I walked down to Sears and bought a DVD player, and then went back to Suncoast and bought the Cowboy Bebop DVDs. But yeah, so it was easy for people to look at it and go, okay, this is a deal. Streaming video was not yet a thing, so you can't say so there was definitely people were going to be buying DVD players. By the time Sony came out with Blu-ray and the PlayStation 3, and Blu-ray was a thing, it was harder to convince people to upgrade to Blu-ray. For a lot of people, the quality you got off a DVD was just fine. But also, this is around the time where digital video starts to make a bigger impact. Netflix started doing streaming shortly after the PlayStation 3 came out. And I think it was harder to convince people that Blu-ray players were more expensive. And
well, you need to upgrade your TV again to 4K.
Not 4K. I use Blu-ray. Blu-ray is 1080p for a lot of it. It's not all 4K.
That's true.
When you buy a Blu-ray, there's
a 4K version.
There's 4K versions and there's Blu-ray versions.
But either way, people had just upgraded their TVs for the first time. Now you got to do another upgrade.
Right. So it was harder to do it and it seemed less essential. But by the time DVD came out, I think everyone realized that VHS was, you know.
Oh, VHS was garbage. You knew VHS was garbage in the early 90s when you're watching it. Like, you watch the same VHS four times and there's error is tracking on it now.
Yeah.
Like when DVD was first announced as a thing. Coming down the pike, like in the, like the mid to late 90s, like 96, like, oh, it's coming. It's the video version of having a CD for music. People were like, what? You don't have to rewind anymore? There's no degradation of quality? Like, that alone was like, this is going to be the biggest thing. Like, people were hungry for DVDs. They were hungry for them. Not in the same way that Blu-rays work. But that all fed into the PS2, even before you get into, well, what games are on here? Like, that was almost secondary, I think, when it first came out.
Yeah, because the PlayStation 2 launch lineup wasn't particularly amazing, but they quickly did get games afterwards.
They cut the price in May 2002 from $300 to $200. So once that happened, then yeah, game on, because now this is cheaper than your most of your DVD players at the time.
So, interestingly, that was around the time that I got my import PS2, around the time I moved out. When I moved out, I wasn't playing a lot of single-player games or RPGs, which is what, you know, Sony was, at that point in time, known for with the PlayStation 1, was all the RPGs it got. So I played a lot of multiplayer games on my GameCube, but then I just wasn't playing as many games. I was out on my own. And then I moved in 2005, and it's funny. I did not experience a lot of the better stuff on the PlayStation 2 library until after it was relevant.
Most of my
that's kind of a lost generation to me.
Okay. So most of my PS2 experiences through my cousin, Dennis, because he had the PS2. They got it was three brothers, always said they got every video game console that came out, like right when it came out. They got everything. So I'd go over and we'd play Midnight Club a lot, which is fantastic game.
It is a good game.
Come on, Rockstar, give me another Midnight Club. You can do it. It won't take you 17 years like a GTA game. We play that late at, like, a Saturday night. You're talking like early 20s. You're hanging out. There's nothing else doing a Saturday night. You go to Dairy Queen, get your Blizzard, come back, and you play Midnight Club until like 1 in the morning, something like that. I think I watched his brother play Metal Gear Solid. I don't know if it was 2 or 3.
It could have been 2 or 3.
But I used to watch that. Oh, this is interesting. To me, it was like the natural progression of watching the PS... watching the original PlayStation being played, because it's a natural progression system. I owned a PS2. I did. I'm not sure many people knew that time. I only owned like 2 games, and I'm struggling to even figure out what the second one was, but I did have my cousin bring over games and we'd play them. So this is how I got my PS2. It was one of those what you think are scam things that existed in the early 2000s, where it was like, click on all these deals and we'll send you a PS2 thing. You ever remember those sort of things?
Mm-hmm.
Like, click on all these things, we'll send you a DVD player. Try all these trials. And I did that, and it was real, but it was tough. So it was like, basically, buy these somehow legal, but should be illegal, amphetamines to help you lose weight. And I still have that bottle somewhere just in stores, because I thought it was funny to have it. I put it in my sock drawer. And you try it for like $10. Try this trial for this. Then you got to cancel.
Probably ephedrine.
Something like that. Yeah. Something that, you know, shouldn't be illegal. So I did all these trials. Most of them you can cancel just from online. But some of them you had to call up and like haggle with someone that knows the only reason you're calling is to cancel it. So you had to spend money on some of these trials. They weren't all free. It was to spend $5 or $10 or whatever. But it only amounted to like spending, I think, like $50 to get a $200 game system, which did arrive. So it all worked. And I did make sure my credit cards weren't like overcharged or anything. I think they only did it for one, and I called and complained. So like, that's how I got my PS2. The reason I got the PS2, though, was I was so jones for SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, which was the, I believe, third or fourth SmackDown game that came out, something like that.
But the first two were on PlayStation, and there was Just Bring It and Here Comes the Pain. I don't remember which, what order they came out
of. Okay. But Here Comes the Pain was fantastic, and it's still regarded as one of the best ever SmackDown or WWE games, I guess, of the modern or more modern era. And I played that game like so much. It was a Ukes game. And the gameplay was smooth.
They were all Ukes until like a year ago.
Oh, that's right. Then now they redid it. But for some reason, people lauded that gameplay as being, I guess, the most intuitive and simple. And they added too much, and it was fine. They had that's when they added like different body parts, pains, and things like that. And they had the reversals were kind of weird, but whatever, because you can keep reversing a million times. But I had a ton of fun playing that and doing the creator wrestler with me and my cousin. We did tag teams and stuff like that. And it was a brave new world playing the PS2 to a lot of people. I remember playing the Warriors with them. He brought over the Warriors game, another Rockstar game, and playing that. And I don't know. I don't call it transition, but maybe it was like something with the turn of the century that PS2 was just in the right place at the right time, and they capitalized on the PlayStation success. And obviously they had a lot of good games. You know, I didn't play a lot of them, but even playing the stuff like State of Emergency, which you look another Rockstar game, looking back, it's like, that's just garbage. At the time, it was fun playing something like that.
Yeah, a lot of franchises either came into their own or started on, like a lot of franchises that are popular today, I should say, either came into their own or got started on the PlayStation 2. You can look at things like God of War, GTA finally, you know, kind of became what it always wanted to be on the PS2.
Two came out first, and then 3 obviously blew up everywhere.
2 was on the PlayStation 1.
On
PlayStation 2, it goes 3, Vice City, San Andreas.
Okay.
And, and until... I know GTA 5 is huge, but a lot of people still consider San Andreas to be kind of the pinnacle of the series. So... yeah, I mean, I don't really have a whole lot more to say, but it was a, you know, lots of RPGs, great sports games, all the big titles, and I mean, during that time period, its competitors were the GameCube and the Xbox, both of which actually did fairly well. I mean, video games just in general were very popular then, but nothing compared to the PlayStation 2.
Yeah, GTA 3, God, we should talk more about what a phenomenon that was, and that. I think that we crossed that boundary. That's what the PS2. That's what the bridge was. That was the boundary of, oh my god, open world. This is what we can do with these games now that we couldn't do 5-6 years ago.
Right.
And GTA 3. I played that game or watched it being played probably a lot more now. I'm looking back whenever I went over, like it would turn to GTA 3, and you were just marveling at that. And I remember that because it was like wow, because I used to love Driver on the PlayStation. That's the reason I had Bleem. To me, like GTA 3 was an extension of Driver, basically. But I was like, well, imagine if you get out of your car. And they tried that with like Driver 2 or 3 and it sucked or whatever.
It went GTA, and then Driver kind of took the exciting part of GTA and made it 3D with the car chases, but didn't have the on-foot stuff. And then GTA 3 kind of completed that circle.
Sure. So that's why I always looked at it. I was like, what if Driver, you can get out of your car, and then GTA 3 makes it happen somehow like magic, because there wasn't a game before that, I think, that came close to even trying that in an environment that big?
The Getaway, but I think The Getaway might have been after. And The Getaway was
even
more
on PC?
I'm trying to think
on a PC, a game that tried to do something like that? You can't even think of it. That's the thing. So GTA 3 was revolutionary, and you can't think of that without thinking of the PS2. Like, they go together. Rockstar and PlayStation, like, they go together. Like Ian's peanut butter and chocolate ice cream we talked about in the intro there. So, yeah, that's all I'm going to say there. And obviously, you know, PS3 comes out, didn't do quite as well as the PS2, what would have, but it obviously was a disappointment in comparison. And, 20 years old, Ian can almost buy some alcohol.
One more year, but we won't talk about it next year.
No, we won't. We don't.
It's not a zero.
We don't talk about consoles or games when they can legally drink and get drunk.
All right,
Ian.
Patrick.
You know we're fans of the Quibi. We're fans of the 10-minute bite-sized Quibites of online streaming entertainment that you can only do basically on your phone or a tablet, and we're having trouble hooking up to TVs because that's a smart business model. So Quibi is shutting down. Only less than what, 7 months into its life? It started early April. It launched, and now they're deciding they're winding down.
The articles that I read said that it was 6 months of actual
operation,
and then I think a whole it's under 2 years old.
Sure, but for the most part, though, people only discovered this around the Super Bowl when they started running awful ads,
right?
You know, and that's when I found out about it. And I've been following this, and most people are more obsessed about following this slow moving car wreck that's been happening.
I obviously say this every time we talk about something ending. I'm not happy that people are losing their jobs, but there is a bit of joy in seeing these horrible ideas fail miserably. Because in the end, it's a lot of capital that is invested. It's a lot of money that is wasted that could be used towards any number of things for these stupid pet projects that have no... And that's the other thing. I find it hard to believe that anyone who worked at Quibi besides Katzenberg...
Oh, they knew it was ending.
They knew it was bullshit. They knew it was ending. And I would like to hope that they all had something on the back burner. But... yeah, this was just a horrible idea. It's a perfect example of someone creating a problem that needs to be solved.
It's an ego project.
It's an ego project, and I take great joy in lambasting ego projects. You know, as someone said to me, and I think it's true, this is one of those ideas where Katzenberg was probably sitting there, you know, like a grandpa, and goes, "Oh, these kids, they're always on their phone. They're always on their phone. Well, why don't we make this thing that you can only use on your phone?" Because there are plenty of things that you can use on your phone and off your phone that fit the bill. It's like someone saying that they need to make a video game system that appeals to only families because a video game system can't possibly appeal to families and non-families.
And not understanding what's in the marketplace currently.
There's no reason why something has to be specifically only for something. There's just no reason for that.
You're targeting a demographic and niche, believing that I can target this better than anything else that exists that is already picking up that audience and fulfilling a need. I'm thinking I can do it better because I say so.
Right.
Basically.
Quibi, I don't think, would have been a great idea even if you could use it on your TV or your internet. But at that point, it would have just been another streaming service, and I think it would have had it would have lived or died based on the content. Quibi did not live or die based on the content, and for what I hear, the content was not great, but it didn't even get it. I don't think the content didn't even have a chance because the idea was so bad.
When your entertainment streaming service is not marketed around the entertainment and more about how you are dicing up the entertainment, we have a problem. Because people don't think about in what time frame they could watch something as the main push them to watch something. They just want to know, what can I watch?
Right.
How easily can I watch it? Not, well, I got to think of a scenario where I want to watch something that's in 10-minute chunks or less because you said that's the way I am consuming the entertainment. And they're trying to blame... What pisses me off about this...
They're blaming COVID.
They're blaming a pandemic, and at least partially. Now, remember in that fucking awful article a couple months ago we talked about where he was blaming it part and parcel. Now he's like, it was partially a pandemic. It hastened your demise, maybe, but this is... People are, you know, still going outside running errands and not watching Quibi. They're not watching in the house. Like, there's no reason why where you are at should influence what type of entertainment you are getting. That doesn't make any sense. Something's either entertaining or it's not.
No one downloads on their phone a YouTube app, a Netflix app, and then goes, you know what? These don't cover my bases. I need to download this Quibi app specifically for when I'm on the bus or on the train. This is my train time app. No one thinks like
that. No one creates folders on their phone for like, okay, you're going to use these apps on the plane, these apps at work, these apps at home. No, that's not how we structure things on our brain. It's not about when. It's about just, how do I... Am I going to be entertained by this? I'll figure out for myself how when that happens. You don't fucking tell me when I should watch something that you're pushing at me. And that's what this service did.
Yeah.
It was trying to decide for me how and when I should be entertained.
It knew us better than we knew ourselves. And that's always, always a disaster.
And by boomers trying to market to millennials and Generation Z... You know, like, they're trying to market to people 50 years younger, 40 years younger than them, not understanding that. I wonder if Katzenberg knows, like, what Twitch is. I wonder if he does. I wonder if he knows. He probably knows what TikTok is, and how people use it and figure, well, this is TikTok, but for, you know, Hollywood stuff. Like, that's not how it works.
I feel like I feel like he doesn't know what YouTube is. Because, I'm trying really hard not to make comparisons here, but to something else. But it's just, it exists. What he wanted to make already exists. YouTube stuff, just by nature of the platform, is generally short. You don't need to impose artificial time limits on this stuff. YouTube did that for a long time and got rid of it for the better, but a lot of people on YouTube are still making things that fall under the 10-minute mark because that's what people's attention span is demanding.
Sure.
You don't need to set the artificial limits. You don't need to say this is only for when you're mobile. When YouTube is already doing that. Yeah.
People can press a pause button and come back. That's a thing. A pause button's a thing. Like, that's what's so weird. It's like, these and watching things, like, the big thing which they're getting sued for now is that, you know, they made things that you could watch, like, watch full movies, and they shot things in what mode versus panorama.
That's a portrait
mode. No one wants to watch movies in fucking portrait mode. No. You don't see anything. It's like looking through a goddamn keyhole and looking at things. You want things widescreen because that's how we view things in real life, is wide
landscape.
Yeah, in landscape, not portrait. So it's insane. And yes, people are out of a job, but they got jobs, and a lot of people made entertainment that they wouldn't have from people that lost a lot of money, a lot of investors losing a lot of money. So, like, people got entertainment was created that wouldn't have been created. So that's actually a positive thing. And some of this was, they won an Emmy. So there obviously is, people got work. In a bad pandemic year, in last year, people still got work. So, like, people were paid to work, and people are getting their severance, it looks like. So that's good. They're being laid off. But in an open letter, they said, CEO Meg Whitman said Quibi's failure was likely due to the core of the idea, as well as the coronavirus pandemic. So this is what I talk about experts and people that when they fail horribly, are allowed to continue. Katzenberg and Whitman may go off and do something else. They don't deserve to after a huge failure, at least to me. Like, this, I mean, this is, they'll write, they're going to do documentaries and books about this.
This is disastrous. Yes, there's going to be, there are books to be written about hubris when it comes to this.
I mean, you talk about people like, oh, New Coke was a disaster. New Coke wasn't a billion-dollar disaster. Like, it might have lost $100 million or a couple hundred million, but, like, Coca-Cola's still around. Like, they realize this is a disaster. We have to stop this here. This is a billion-dollar and billion-dollar shutting down in 6 months disaster. This
I
is
thought
a,
it was almost two.
What was?
I thought it was almost $2 billion.
Well, I think what was going to happen is, I think they're not going to spend the money they were going to outlay for a program for next year. So it's at least $1 billion.
Gotcha.
I think what they decided to do, yeah, they raised $1.8 billion, but I think they're being smart. We're not going to use the last whatever $500 million. We're not that stupid. But they're going to try to probably what they're going to try to do is sell off some of the shows to Hulu and Prime and Netflix, and all three of those companies are going to start just laugh in their faces. Like, why do we want your hand-me-downs that mm-hmm. we didn't want? Like, with the exception, there'll probably be some stuff that survives, or there'll be a movie here or there that ended up being, you know, that'll get picked up.
The other thing I read, and I think we talked about it on a previous Quibi topic, is that they don't even own the programming that they were...
Yeah, it was basically a whatever, 3-year licensing fee they were basically paying for some of this stuff. So
it's insane.
So it's just batshit.
You've got nothing.
So I guess you can sell the license for a few years until it's gone. So yeah, if I'm Netflix, I'd be like, well, fuck you. Like, yeah. I'm not buying it myself. Like, you're transferring a license over me. Good point, Ian. I don't know if that's for everything, but that's what we brought up before. They shelled out. Yeah, it says in this article from Variety, actually, Quibi doesn't own any of the big budget premium content. They don't own the big stuff. They probably own, like, the little shitty shows. They shelled upwards out of $100,000 per minute. That's insane.
That it is.
So here it is. 7-year license on its short form series. After 2 years, content owners had the right to assemble the shows and distribute them elsewhere.
That's okay. Yeah.
So it's a 2-year, basically 2-year exclusivity. And so they don't even get this stuff forever. They don't get Chrissy's Court forever. They get it for only 7 years. So, like, you have to go back and keep creating new content. Now, yes, obviously Netflix and Hulu and Prime and whatever else, they're not... actually, the other ones that I see, the Apple TV thing picking up, is that you have to constantly make new content. But to replace content that's there, that's the issue, that you pay to make. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. All right. Well, that's about all I can say about this. I mean, obviously, I want to see the documentaries now. I want to see the tell-all books. I want to see the interviews with the employees about how crazy it was that reportedly Whitman and Katzberg hated each other and worked on different floors and never talked face-to-face. Like, how could you do that and run a company? Yeah.
It's insane.
In its first year, they had planned to launch 175 original series and 8,500 episodes, but clearly that was not going to happen. And again, this was going to be $5 monthly with ads, $5, and $8 without ads. So they're already up to like Hulu. Like, that's what you pay for Hulu or Disney Plus at $8. And
you don't have any of the names.
You don't have the good content, and you have watch it on your fucking phone. I think they figured out some of the stuff eventually. And no, it's not memeable. You can't share it easily.
Oh yeah, you can't do screenshots and stuff.
The most famous meme created was someone taking on their cell phone of the woman with the golden arm. That's the only thing I know about from Quibi was that was the memeable thing, because I couldn't believe this was actually a show on Quibi.
Right. Yeah.
I want to be buried with my golden arm. It's killing you. I don't want to take my golden arm off. That I couldn't tell if it was serious or like just a big joke. I think Sam Raimi was involved somehow in that, either producing or writing. I don't know. Like it was like the easiest probably pay for some of these people ever that they got. They knew this was going to be a disaster. They got paid. Good for them. All right, Ian, we have a Patreon.
We do.
How do you access that Patreon?
My mouth is starting to hurt. You go to patreon.com/CU podcast.
What do you get there, Ian?
Oh, I do a writing about once a week. I just recently wrote about Twizzlers.
Taste the Rainbow. That's Starburst.
That's Skittles.
I got three wrong.
Starburst is the juice is loose.
Okay.
That was 90s. You get the full video podcast.
And we don't do it in portrait. We do it in landscape, not like Quibi.
That's right. I do a hangout, and
weekly Patreon poll.
Have a weekly Patreon poll. What did we have this week? Besides Super Mario 35, what retro games could make good battle royale games at 20%? What do you miss about gaming conventions at 24%? And the shoo-in, Halloween stories and candy memories at 56%.
We've probably done this at least twice. We've been doing the podcast now for Jesus Christ 7 years. 7 years. So, I mean, we can start off wherever. Halloween stories. Do you want to start with me?
Yeah, I'll start because this is getting progressively worse. So let me get into this right now. So I've talked about candy plenty before, and we just recently did our Halloween episode on extra napkins. So I've already talked about Halloween candy this week. However, I was thinking about Halloween stories and more Halloween memories, and I was thinking about the costumes I had as a kid and how good my mom was at making costumes. When I was growing up, most of my costumes were handmade by her, and she did really good jobs on them. I remember the first one I can remember was it was a simple actually, I can't remember the first one, but various... I loved reading comic strips when I was a kid, like newspaper comic strips, so she made me a Hobbs costume. I had a Hobbs costume 1 year, full tiger bodysuit.
Oh, please, is there pictures of that?
I don't think
there is. Can you please send me a picture of that?
One that was even cooler that she outdid herself with was the next year she made me an Opus costume from Bloom County, the penguin.
I saw the plush in the garage I was going to show you. Did I ever show you that when I got the swap meet?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I've got an Opus plush too. He's wrapped up like a Christmas present. But the Opus costume involved a full like pull down headpiece with holes for the eyes, and she sewed the big schnoz on Opus.
Oh my god!
It was all stuffed in plush. My brother went his Link one year for Halloween, and she made the Link costume for him.
What a nice mom!
She made a big pumpkin costume for him one year that was like really cool. And I remember one year my brother and I both went as pterodactyls. That was actually, I think that's the first one because I was real little when she did that and made us like a full-on like head thing and like wings that you put your arms through. And she was just, she was exceptional at making those.
Should have opened up her own company.
And like everything my mom does, that she gets really into, that she's really good at, she gets hyper into it, gets really good at it, and then at some point stops. Like she still can sew, and she sews from time to time, but it's not, she doesn't do it very often anymore. She used to be really good at art. She was very good with charcoal. She doesn't really do art anymore. She just constantly picks up new things to do. And I found out the other day that she is now a car salesperson.
What?
And is very good at it.
Okay.
Apparently. She in her first month doing it, she tied the best person at the dealership. So I was thinking about that the other day because I was talking to her on the phone. She was telling me about it, and I was thinking about Halloween. I was just thinking about all these different things my mom has done that she's been very good at in her life, and she just moves on. She gets bored easily. But yeah, she was fantastic at making Halloween costumes, and I do kind of want to go back and see if I can find any pictures.
Do the costumes exist? They hopefully kept the costumes.
I believe the pterodactyl costumes still exist. The pumpkin costume still exists. I have no idea if the Opus costume still exists. I think the Hobbs costume was deconstructed into something else later on.
All right, we probably did this last year. I'm gonna look for best Halloween candy, like a poll. I feel like we did this last year or 2 years ago while we were at Castle Country here, about best Halloween candy ever ranked here. We can just go through this list and agree with some of this. And I don't have experience with every Halloween candy, but boy, do I have experience with a lot here. Okay, number 30, Airheads. I don't remember eating Airheads really as a kid. I never was into that.
I love Airheads. I don't remember them being a Halloween candy.
Why do they call them Airheads?
Actually, I don't know.
Because they're not light, right?
No, they're not.
Chewy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Jolly Ranchers. Fucking Jolly Ranchers at 29. God, I could put that higher. Jolly Ranchers were the best. I don't know if it was an East Coast thing or Jersey thing or New York thing. Jolly Ranchers were like always top five most prolific candies you receive at Halloween. You'd always get Jolly Ranchers. You'd always get the little guys. They throw you a handful in your bag. I used a Halloween bag, or use your pillowcase because you have the most strength in that and durability. I never used a little plastic pumpkin thing in the past 6 years old. Come on, what are you screwing around with here? That's like two meals worth of candy only.
They're awful for your teeth, but they're very strongly flavored. They're very tasty.
Jolly Ranchers are fantastic. The taste lasts forever because, yeah, it's probably like layers of sugar gloss and whatever. Obviously, the apple is memorable. Sometimes you get the sticks, remember the little sticks?
They still
sell those, I think, the sticks, right?
The sticks, yeah.
But no, I remember coming home and you just have like 75 random Jolly Ranchers pieces. That's what you'd have. You'd have like you'd have watermelon, you'd have apple. What else you had? You had cherry.
Watermelon, apple, cherry, grape, lemon.
There was a light one.
Strawberry.
Yeah. Jolly Ranchers are great. Sour Patch Kids, never was into them.
Love them.
I'm not into the more really fruity stuff like that. With Jolly Ranchers is like an exception. Runts? I don't think I've ever had a runt in my life.
I love runts.
What do runts taste like? They taste like...
They're hard, crunchy, fruit-shaped candy.
They're shaped like the fruits. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, the bananas, everything else is a circle. But, it's like the strawberries look like a strawberry shape.
And the cherries have a little dip in them.
Blow Pops are fantastic. That's a 26 here. Blow Pops. Let me tell you about Blow Pops. Blow Pops is a 2-in-1 candy, which are obviously rare here, and like people like comparing them to Tootsie Roll Pops, but the Tootsie Roll center of Tootsie Pop does not compare to me to gum. I like gum a lot better than Tootsie Roll. I like Tootsie Rolls, Pops. But you know, they taste the same on the outside for the most part. But Blow Pops to me, probably top 10 candy to me. That's controversial. I love Blow Pops. Like, Blow Pops are just well made, always tasted crisp on the outside, always had a strong fruit flavor. And then you got some of that fruit flavor in the gum when you got to the gum.
They're good.
So it was a candy that would last you like 2 hours. How much candy lasts you, like, you know what I mean? Like, you eat it and you go to the, you transition, the, and the gum would last a decent amount. I remember. It wasn't like a quick throw it out, like bubble tape gum shit that lasted like a split second. Love Blow Pops. What's your favorite Blow Pop paper, flavor?
Grape.
Grape. Whoppers, never liked Whoppers. I don't like malt stuff.
I love malt stuff. The chocolate on the outside of a Whopper is dog shit.
It was terrible.
It's
chocolate.
It's just shiny wax. It's disgusting.
I just never liked the consistency of that crunch. I just never liked that as a kid. Maybe now I like it. Whoppers. Plus, I never got candy. You know, it was like the Whoppers was like a candy you get it like at the going to the theater. I never got that stuff. So, here's the one you definitely got. Milk Duds. Nope. Don't like the chocolate caramel milk does. Never was into it.
Love the combination of chocolate and caramel, but they're all, even as a kid, I could tell that they were doing fucking irreparable damage to my teeth.
Oh, you can tell that? You're like, yeah, this is bad.
This is bad.
Pure caramel just with chocolate
stuck.
Outside. All right, Milky Ways are fantastic.
They're good.
Let me tell you about Milky Ways. It's the bastard child of Milky Ways. Excuse me, of Three Musketeers and Snickers bars, but who cares? It's a great combo of both, except for the peanuts. There, it's fantastic. Got the nougat, you got the caramel, just no peanuts.
The
like
dark
the Milky
chocolate
Way.
Milky Way is really good.
That's newer the past what 10 years or so they started doing them.
I mean, they existed when I was in high school, so they're older than that. But yeah, the midnight Milky Way is dark chocolate on the outside, white nougat. So good.
Laffy Taffy, have no experience with Laffy Taffy. I mean, saltwater taffy, yes, like real, you know, talk about East Coast stuff. Not Laffy Taffy, I don't experience with. This one said, this is a Thrillist article. Some extremely artificial fruit flavoring, a sore jaw, and a couple of rapper jokes that you feel embarrassed for chuckling at. Bring it. Nerds. All right, Nerds. Nerds seems like...
I love Nerds.
When you look at Nerds, you're still surprised it exists today.
Like, I am, but they're delicious. I fucking love
We're
Nerds.
Talking just like sugar balls.
They're just...
Flavor, artificial sugar balls.
Crunchy, tart sugar.
Yes. And as a kid... they had the small ones. They still make the small ones with two sides on them. The small ones have two sides, yeah.
It's a normal size. No, it's the normal
the
size
ones
box
have two
has two sides. Then you can get the movie theater size box of Rainbow Nerds. And then my favorite way to eat Nerds, because I just do them like a shot.
The small individual
little
ones?
Boxes, yeah.
Okay, the smaller boxes, they give out at Halloween usually. Mm-hmm. And they had the one flavor. Yeah, Nerds were great because, like you said, you could like chug them back if
so
you wanted
tasty.
To. Grape. Strawberry, cherry.
Grape Nerds are fucking unbeatable.
But if you can do the combo with the two sides where went back and forth, you can like do both at the same time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nerds. It's funny. When I went to the candy store, the big candy store in Vegas, at one of the casinos, there was a Nerd section. They actually had, like, they had a nerd hanging out there in 2012 at Classic Gaming Expo. So yeah, I'm glad that Nerds are still around. I wish they could make a bigger comeback. Skittles. Love Skittles. Mm. Skittles are probably the more natural tasting sort of fruit snack to me out of all of them.
I can't do Skittles anymore, not since they replaced lime with green apple. It totally throws off the entire balance.
Why'd they do that? Is it cheaper?
Because they suck.
Paydays. I don't have experience with Payday bars. I hear they're good. I don't have experience.
Number one favorite candy bar.
Really?
Payday. I fucking love Paydays. It's...
most peanuts per square foot.
They make chocolate dipped ones too, and I don't care for the chocolate dipped ones. I like the Payday because it's so simple. It's just peanuts and caramel
nougat
and no nougat. That's a Baby Ruth, and I don't like Baby Ruths. It's just peanuts and caramel and
stuck together.
The peanuts are, and this is key, very salty. It's a very salty, sweet sort of candy bar. I fucking love them.
So they're like whole peanuts, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a Payday in my life.
Oh, God, they're so good. Honestly, it's like the one thing, and ever since I've started having the tooth problems, I have not been able to eat Paydays, and it's like the one candy I really, really miss.
I want a Payday. I don't think I've ever had it. Haribo gummies. This is the goat of gummy bears.
Mm-hmm.
They are, when they're in Germany or whatever, they are soft. Not the hard, crappy ones. They are delicious. They melt in your mouth. And they don't taste as artificial as some of the other cheaper gummy bears.
No, Haribo stuff in general is very good.
Junior Mints. Never liked Junior Mints.
Love them.
Never liked them. I guess I don't like the ones that you buy at movie theaters because I never was given them to experience. Now I think about it. Damn it, Dad, buy me a Junior Mint. Twizzlers, Ian. Do you like Twizzlers?
I do. I like Twizzlers quite a bit. Wrote about them this past week. I like Twizzlers better than Red Vines. That seems to be one of those controversial weird East Coast, West Coast things. Red Vines are fine. They're fine. But I like Twizzlers better.
Twizzlers will give me a headache. I don't know because of the waxiness or the fuck they put in it. Or maybe that's how I am with that stuff. But yeah, I can't eat a lot of that stuff. I just can't. It just gets to me. So Twizzlers was never on my list. I can eat the mini ones. You know, they have the mini ones. I couldn't eat a full Twizzler as a kid. I just couldn't. It just gave me a headache. Baby Ruths. Never was a fan of Baby Ruths.
I hate Baby Ruths.
It just seemed like there wasn't enough to keep me interested in a Baby Ruth bar.
Everything that's in a Baby Ruth is something I should enjoy. I like nugget. I like peanuts. I like chocolate. But whatever ingredients they're actually using to make a Baby Ruth, I think they're fucking disgusting.
M&M's, of course. M&M's are, you know, one of the all-time classics. I obviously go peanut M&M.
Plain M&M's are very plain and boring, but peanut M&M's, all the flavored M&M's, all the ones
they have like peanut butter ones now?
They've had peanut butter ones since like the 80s.
Really?
Yes, but peanut butter ones are very good.
That's are you like sure? Because I never had that as a kid, and I should have. Peanut butter M&M's. Are you sure about that, Ian?
They've been around since at least the early 90s.
Okay, now you're going to the early 90s. Because as a kid,
Late 80s, early 90s.
It was the
first. I think peanut butter was the first flavor they added after peanut.
Because I remember it was either dark brown, you got a little dark brown fun size, or you got the yellow one. And boy, oh boy, I try to trade my regular M&M's for peanut as much as possible. All right, you can do that research on peanut butter M&M's. Flavor Tootsie Rolls, not a fan.
I fucking love the flavored Tootsie Rolls. No. I love them.
I'm surprised it made this list for a top three. I would never have thought of flavored Tootsie Rolls even popping up.
I used to see them in the bag a lot.
And that's more of a new thing, of course. That was when I was 9 or 8. I don't remember seeing flavored Tootsie Rolls.
Trust me.
Maybe vanilla. Do they have vanilla ones?
Vanilla, lime, lemon, cherry. Those have always existed as long as I can
remember. Don't remember eating them. Heath Bar. Toffee.
Love Heath Bars. Love them. Heath and Score both. Very good.
This could be my top five Starbursts. Starburst is my all-time favorite fruit-flavored candy. All-time favorite. Way better than Skittles because with Starburst, you don't feel like...
Peanut butter M&M's, 1989.
Oh, okay. Didn't make the get out there into my neighborhood. Starburst is amazing because it doesn't taste as bad as it probably is for you, Starburst. Like they do a good job with the juiciness. Once you get into it, a Starburst, my mouth's starting to water.
Starbursts, yeah. I like Starbursts in general, but really what it comes down to for me is I like Starbursts. Lemon Starbursts are one of my favorite candies of all time, specifically lemon. If I had the option to just buy a bag of lemon Starbursts,
really?
I would. They're fucking, oh God, I love them.
What's my favorite? The pink or the red?
Pink is strawberry, red is cherry, and then there's orange.
They're all good. Like it's good to alternate. Like because it's like you get a little boost of each one.
They're good, but yes. And growing up, I knew lots of people who didn't like the lemon Starburst, so I was in heaven because they would always just give them to me, no questions asked.
Hershey bars. I'm talking about it's the classic Hershey bar. They're just the good old American shitty sugar chocolate Hershey bar from Hershey, Pennsylvania. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I would imagine probably those little ones. Those are very common Halloween candies.
Well, the fun pack. You get Mr. Goodbar, you get Crackle, you get Dark, and regular Hershey's. You get all
Good
four.
Goodbar, Crackle, Dark, and...
Special Dark. But even the Special Dark chocolate tasted like ass compared to like real dark chocolate at the time. Because Hershey's chocolate throws way too much sugar in it. But no, those were always... You always get the fun size. Because you buy them today. You buy the mixed bag and you give them out to kids.
I mentioned it on Twitter Crackle's last week. Good. But Special Dark is not good, but there's something comforting about it. I can't eat a lot of it.
Nostalgic.
But there is a taste to it that I am happy to experience once or twice every Halloween
season. It's like a fake dark chocolate. Yeah. It's like...
So there's something appealing about it, but not in large quantities.
Reese's Pieces. You know what? On paper, I should like Reese's Pieces more than I actually do. I think they're okay. I'm not in love with the peanut butter and Reese's Pieces. Okay.
Love Reese's Pieces. They're think over time, especially and we've talked about this on Extra Napkins, we've talked about this on here multiple times, but as the quality of Reese's peanut butter cups continues to plummet, my love of Reese's Pieces rises.
This is going to go in my top 5, if not top 10, Nestle Crunch. Love a Nestle Crunch. I love the fun size Nestle Crunch. Those the two little thick guys you break apart. It's the perfect, because Crackle has rice in it. Crackle ain't close to a Nestle Crunch. I don't know, it's because the Nestle chocolate's better, but the consistency or the of chocolate versus rice on a Nestle Crunch, especially the fun size, is fantastic. It's the best crunch for your dollar right there. Nestle Crunch bar. Mr. Good Bar. Like a Mr. Good Bar? I don't think I've ever had a full-size Mr. Good Bar in my life.
I would love a Mr. Good Bar with better chocolate. And sure. That's the weird thing. Like, you would think, I mean, peanuts and chocolate is a very common combo, but I can't think of any other candy. Like, Mr. Good Bar is Hershey's. There's no, like, Nestle's equivalent of a Mr. Good Bar.
True. They never got in that market.
The Cadbury peanut and raisin bar is super good, though.
Well, 100 grand, is that the equivalent or close?
No, 100 grand's are caramel, crisp rice, and then chocolate.
Oh, there's no peanuts in that?
No.
I never had 100. I must have had 100 grand bar because they gave them that as to kids. They did give out the fun size one.
They're super good.
I just at the top of my head can't remember what it tastes like.
Tastes like chewy.
Butterfinger. Butterfinger ain't in my top 10. Butterfinger is the greatest mistake you've made after biting into something immediately.
I like Butterfingers. My problem is that 50% of them have one kind of texture, and then 50% of them have another kind of texture. I think it's just because of the weird way that sugar peanut butter stuff is made. But sometimes they're very crunchy, and sometimes they're flaky and light. And I like them when they're flaky and light.
Whatever peanut glass that they put in there that you have to bite into, I don't know what it is or how they make it. But, I mean, God, it's probably responsible for two of my cavities I've ever gotten on a Butterfinger. But they're tasty, but you regret it. Kit Kat bars. Love them.
Yep.
Love a Kit Kat bar. Kit Kats are always good for Halloween because you get the two. You get the two fun. The fun size is half a regular one.
Well, it was.
What's the fun size? No, one?
No, it's two, but it's like this fucking tall.
Oh, get the fuck out of here. Really? They ruined that too?
Fun size is not...
Well, I know it's not half anymore, but with Kit Kat, at least it was within the realm of possibilities.
It's just like the Twix. It used to be like a fun size was half a Twix. Now it's like half of a half.
So Kit Kats are always up there. And the light airiness of a Kit Kat, it felt like it was the diet chocolate Halloween candy. That's why I liked it. To me.
That's why you liked it?
Yes, that's why I was.
I thought I was a weird kid.
I was thick but quick, but I thought that I was losing weight somehow eating a Kit Kat bar. And that's what it was. Snickers bar. Probably my favorite candy bar out there. Unless I remember what a Fifth Avenue bar tastes like, which I can't remember.
Fifth Avenue is Hershey's version of Butterfinger.
Okay, so fuck that. I thought it was different than that. But Snickers is my all-time favorite because it's all three. You get the Milky Way, you get the caramel you get Three Musketeers nugget, you get the caramel of a Milky Way, and you get the peanuts. It's fantastic. It's a perfect combination of ingredients to me.
I was, for whatever reason, for a long time, not a huge fan of Snickers. Like, I like everything in it. Didn't care for the bar. Again, this year with Treg buying the Halloween candy for Luna, I had a Snickers, and then I had another Snickers. Then I had another.
You're like, what is this?
And then I had another. And I was like, all right, I got to stop. This is actually pretty good.
No, Twix.
Love it.
This is going to be controversial to me. I could take or leave the caramel Twix, that peanut butter Twix. I went to the dollar store. They had rows of caramel Twix, no peanut butter Twix. Like, why aren't they producing the peanut butter Twix
they used to? We went through this last year.
Where are they?
I even brought you one.
When did you bring me one? Like a year ago?
Like a year ago. The peanut butter Twix is everywhere.
Why?
It's literally everywhere.
Peanut butter Twix is fantastic. And the number one on this list, and I am apt to agree mostly, is a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup.
In theory.
In theory.
On paper.
It's the best candy.
I agree. However, every peanut butter cup I've had in like the past 3 years has been a letdown. It's either been too mushy
or dried out,
melted together. I talked about this on Extra Napkins, and someone sent us something about it last week. Apparently, after Halloween, once a year, you can order Reese's peanut butter cups direct from the factory. It's like $30, and I think you get 30 packs or something like that.
That's not a bad deal.
And
50 cents each.
I saw it and I was like, that's cool, but I don't need it. And then I went to work And at the one location, Traeg had bought peanut butter cups. And I had one, and I was like, this is fucking dog shit. I said, why are these always so shitty these days? So I was like, you know what? I'm gonna order these peanut butter cups direct from the factory because I want to see if it if my theory is true, and it's just that they're never fresh. And so right before we've recorded Extra Napkins, I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna order these and I'll talk about it on Extra Napkins. And I went to order it, and they're sold out. And it's funny because they say when they ship them out in November, and they say that they are within a few days of being manufactured. Mm-hmm. How popular must it be if they sell out of the pre-orders before Halloween happens?
So the factory direct peanut butter cups, they're already sold out this year, pre-orders?
They've already sold out the pre-order allotment.
So there might be something too, like, well, these are the fresher ones.
That's what John said too. John was like, well, if they're selling out, there's got to be something to that.
But hey, we go back to the Easter eggs and the Christmas trees, and I guess they do pumpkins for Halloween. That tastes better consistency than a regular peanut butter cup at this point.
It does.
But it should be the same ingredients. But in general, I agree with this, that peanut butter cups, to me, overall, is the best. Okay, I do agree with that. I'm surprised that Hershey Kisses did not make this list. Kind of surprised. Because Hershey Kisses, at least when we were kids, you got a lot of Hershey Kisses as a kid thrown at you. I did.
I agree that Hershey's chocolate was popular, but in my neighborhood, it was always those small bars. I didn't really get the
Kisses. It was everything, but like you get like anything with a handful is cheaper. Because Hershey Kisses, remember originally it was just silver. Before they even did the holiday ones that were right in green with it. They just throw them at you. Just the regular ones.
I always associate Hershey's Kisses with Christmas.
I can't imagine Christmas. Like, that's, yeah.
Because as much as I dislike Hershey's chocolate, normally, like, I'll eat it, but it's not good. The Kisses with almonds were, like, one of my favorite things. Hershey's Kisses with almonds are just amazing.
Oh, that's right. They came out with those, too.
It's usually just one big almond in the center. And, yeah, my mom used to buy them for... My mom and my dad used to get them for us every year. My stocking every year was 50% Hershey's Kisses with almonds, 50% Andes Mints. That's what I always...
Oh, the Andes ones that my grandma used to have?
with the green foil.
Yeah, yeah. My grandma used to have them in her little crystal bowl sitting out there.
What a lot of people don't realize is that Andes did a bunch of different flavors for
a while. Yeah, did orange.
They might still. And my mom, I think, in particular, really liked them. But the one that I love the most that I don't see anymore, it came in like a bronze or gold wrapper. They did toffee Andes, and they were just out of control delicious.
See, half of mine, now we're going to Christmas candy. That could be all the topic. Half of mine was Russell Stover. Whatever they do, like the little like Santa guys or whatever, because it was a better quality chocolate. It wasn't just like the cheap dollar store or CVS chocolate you'd fucking get that was like dried out and disgusting there. All right, in terms of costumes real quick, Halloween costumes, Ian outdid me. I mean, I think my mom might have made water. My sister tried to help. My sister, probably in sixth grade, made me a Punisher shirt, which I think I still have, but it was way too long. But she used that you know, the collaring you put on shirts to draw stuff. She'd be like a Punisher skull. Mm-hmm. But I would just be an army guy one year with a green Uzi that came from Kmart. That was one year. I don't know how they'd allow that. Well, they wouldn't allow it at schools nowadays, but even at Catholic school, they allowed weapons somehow. They didn't care in the 80s. The 90s was great. There was ninjas running around. I was a ninja one year. I was a cowboy probably when I was 5 years old with a holster and a little cap gun. Did everything have a weapon that I was as a kid? I don't think so, but most years. It's always fun to have an accessory as a kid. I was a Grim Reaper one year.
Sorry, they still make the Toffee Crunch Andes. That makes me very happy.
All right, so someone's going to get some for Christmas. I was Grim Reaper one year for Halloween because you buy the nice big Sith. And that was cheap. I hate to say because like buying the black thing and a mask was like your $10 cheaper costume back then.
And the scythe is like super cheap.
Yeah. And plus you can get it at a drug, you know, God, not, what was the drugstore? God, I can't remember the one that was near me. That was the chain. What was the drugstore chain that's not around anymore on the East Coast? Drug Right? Was that a name? Am I making this up? Holy shit. I can't remember because that was our local store where they had the cheap costumes out front. They had like the $7 or $6 costumes. Remember those with the plastic masks? Mm-hmm. They had those out front that were basically like putting... It was like putting on a plastic bag that was drawn on, basically, those costumes. It was one above that. So, those are most of my experiences. I've told you about my ninja fight before on the show. Yeah, we've gone through my ninja fight. Go watch a pass. I was humiliated. My ninja sword broke. I felt like Ninja Gaiden's father getting killed. But my sister made me stars. She got hard cardboard. Cut it. My sister did good for me as sometimes, which was me bullying me to run and get her Barbies to play with. She cut out the ninja stars and covered them with tinfoil and wrapped them up. So I had a few ninja throwing stars. Nice. That, you know, would actually hurt you because they had sharp corners. So that was my fun. And then of course we talk about, you know, if it was a good like Friday or Saturday, which is why I'm very disappointed for kids this year, because this is Saturday this year, Halloween, which is the best day to have Halloween because you have like 8 hours to trick or treat. We would go different towns. We would start local, do this town and town over. Oh, then drive me to Mark's house, a few towns over. We do those rounds, slightly richer neighborhood, maybe a chance to get fuller bars. And you'd end up with, I'm talking, you'd have like 15 pounds of candy potentially when you're done. Like if you're out for like 5-6 hours on a Saturday, like you're out to like 10 at night almost, if you start at like 5 or 3 in the afternoon. Like I got home from school like 2:30 usually, 2:20, something like that. You'd be out by 2:45, 2:50 with your friends. You'd be out. Mm-hmm. Even on a school night, you can go get 4 or 5 hours in.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd have your backup pillowcases. You'd be having 2 pillowcases. You could do your drop-off, dump, go back out. Oh, yeah. We had our rounds. No, it was an art. Like Halloween's, to me, like it's like my favorite holiday.
That's great.
Because it's nothing but, it's mostly geared at children for the most part, and the joy of just eating candy, and there's nothing necessarily religious behind it. If you take out November 1st and, you know, All Saints Day, whatever else, which is kind of what it's, you know, associated with. It's just a dumb, stupid holiday. It gives you a chance to have fun and not worry about things. That's all. That's why I love Halloween. That's why I think most people like Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Thanksgiving, I can take it or leave it, to be honest. I mean, besides the food, I don't care. About Thanksgiving. Yeah, I'm starving.
Yeah. I'm done talking.
Yeah, I didn't figure we'd get to that last topic again. But we got an extra topic, I think, out of the streamer thing.
Yep, so, I think we did too.
So we're good there. So, all right, well, this is a fun podcast, I think.
Time to go home and eat something soft.
We got some custard.
We got yogurt. We got cottage cheese.
Ooh. You want a nice Butterfinger right now? What that would feel like?
Oh, my God. No.
Your head would collapse and stuff.
That would be miserable.
Teeth would implode. Oh, man. All right. This is a fun one. Remember to vote next Tuesday.
Yes.
Remember, if you're in Wisconsin, I'm sure we have listeners in Wisconsin, drop off your ballot somewhere. Don't mail it in. If you don't get it mailed in by, like, today or tomorrow, fucking drop it off at a polling station on the day if you're a mail voter, because with this ruling, they might not count the vote if it's even postmarked. So very important that your vote counts. Obviously, it's insane that I have to say that, to try not to count people's votes. So make sure you vote and make sure you do it smartly. And all else fails, you can drop it off at the registrar in your county or wherever. Just look it up online; you'll find where you can drop it off. There's some states have drop-off stations, or you know, or you can wait till election day and you can drop it off at any polling booth. You can drop it off legally. Yeah. So there you have it.
All right.
All right. We'll see you on election day, November 3rd. Have a good one, everyone.
Toodles.